Okay, so I'm just going to get right into the meat of this topic. I love reading fables. If you weren't paying attention in 10th grade English, a fable is a short story, usually with talking animals that have a moral at the end of them. A good way to remember is that the word fable starts with an F, and so does furries. So, some examples of a fable you might have heard are the tortoise and the hare, Humpty Dumpty, Pacific Rim, and the autobiography of Hillary Clinton. This one's a fable because the main character is a bit. I'm just kidding. Humpty Dumpty's not a fable. So there's this guy named Aesop, and he's best known for creating a bunch of fables. He's written over 655, and seriously, I don't know why for some reason we can't find the exact number. How many fables has he written? Over 655! Oh, so 656? Like, what's the range here? Unfortunately, he has died, so he won't be writing any more fables. So why can't we get the exact number? Like, what the heck, guys? And he also had a very strong no-photo policy, so no pictures of him were ever taken. Because he was born around 500 BC. I don't even think he knew what a camera was, so here we go. This is what he supposedly looked like. And what I like most about fables is that the wording is so, like, Shakespearean and old-timey, and it makes you feel like you're smart for reading these short paragraph-long stories. And even better, they have a moral at the end of them, so once you're done reading, you're like, oh man, that was deep. Like, every single fable can end with one character dropping a microphone. Like, the whole story is just build-up to that one moral moment. Okay, so I'm going to read some of my favorite fables to you guys. I'm not going to read them how Aesop wrote them, though, because he had so many unnecessary smart-sounding words when really all of his fables could be shortened down to, like, 3 sentences. So here we go. Aesop's fables in my own words.
Belling the cat.
So there's these mice that get together, and they're trying to come up with a plan to get this cat to stop killing them. And one mouse is like, oh, we could put a bell around the cat, you know? So now we could hear it or something. And this other mouse is like, yeah, all right, yeah, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Who's going to put the bell on? Okay, so this one's kind of actually stupid. I don't really know what the moral is. Like, maybe no one wants to be the person to sacrifice themselves for the good of humanity or my sanity or... Okay, here's my version of the rest of that story. So after the mouse said that, the other mouse goes, oh, geez, other mouse, you're right. I didn't think of that. Well, I guess I say we all grab our toothpicks and kill the cat. You know, at least that ending made sense. A bell? Pfft. How about you poison it? Or, like, move somewhere where there's not a cat in the first place.
The horse and the groom.
So there's this horse and a groom, which is not the wedding kind. It's an actual groomer who just calls himself a groom. So this groom spends all this time brushing the horse and making it look pretty. And he also takes some of the horse's oats and sells it for extra cash. Okay, stop right there. Aren't oats supposed to be really cheap? Isn't that a thing? Okay, so the horse is getting malnourished and says, you know, you should really stop worrying about brushing me and more about feeding me. Man, that's deep, I think. The moral is, don't steal your horse's oats. Especially if it talks, like you will never hear the end of it. The farmer with the goose with the golden eggs. So there's this farmer, and he somehow gets a goose that lays golden eggs. And now you might be thinking, what's with all these gooses that lay golden eggs? Jack and the Beanstalk did it. The Simpleton Brothers did it. Well, did you know that this is the very first time a goose laying golden eggs has ever appeared in writing? I actually don't know if that's true. I made it up. I mean, it might be true. I don't know. It was 500 BC, you guys. It was a long time ago. And the goose only lays one egg a day, and the farmer gets greedy and wants more eggs. So he thinks, oh, I bet all the eggs are inside the goose. So he chops up the goose, and guess what? There's only more goose parts in there, not eggs. Okay, so the moral, know how basic things work, especially if you're a farmer and you don't know how geese work, or at least be close friends with someone who knows this. Hey man, I don't think that's how geese work. I mean, I get how you might think this is a magic goose because everything about this is physically impossible, but we could already live pretty decent lives with just one egg a day. Like, we're already in the top 1% now. How can a goose carry around a golden egg inside of itself? Do you know how heavy gold is? If there's solid gold, can a goose ever have babies? This seems like an evolutionary dead end to me. The bat and the weasels. So there once was this bat, and he fell. Somehow. Aesop never really says how it fell. It's a bat. It can fly. Okay, so the bat gets caught by a weasel. Like, one of these things? Okay, so you're saying that a bat gets caught by a weasel because he fell. Whatever, okay. So the weasel says, I am an enemy to all birds, and I'm going to eat you. And the bat goes, I'm not a bird, I'm a mouse. Oh, what are these things that look like wings? Oh, these? That's my blanket. Because I'm cold. Okay, that part wasn't in the story. So the weasel lets him go, but then it happens again with a different weasel, and this weasel says, I am an enemy to mice, and I'm going to eat you. And the bat goes, oh, tiny weasel, but I'm not a mouse. I'm a bird. And then he lets him go. Again. Sometimes Aesop wrote the moral you're supposed to take at the end. He did it with this one, and the moral verbatim is, look and see which way the wind blows before you commit yourself. So are you saying to follow the crowd? Like, go with the flow? That's not really good moral, Aesop. Also, why didn't the bat just say, I'm a bat, losers, and I can fly later? It's also teaching you to make up lies on the spot that contradict your first lie. That's how you get caught lying. Okay, so last fable, the fox and the crow. So this crow has a piece of cheese in her beak, and this fox comes along and is like, oh, you're so beautiful. Oh, I just love your feathers. I wish I could just hear you sing. This crow is now very flattered, and she goes to sing, and then the cheese falls out of her mouth, and the fox eats it. And then the last line, this is beautiful, the fox says, you have a voice, madam. I see. What you want is wits. Moral of the story, everyone wants to steal your cheese. Don't let your guard down for a second. That would be a good t-shirt design. Like, it would say, everyone wants to steal your cheese, and then it would have like a silhouette of a fox and a crow. Someone make that t-shirt. I'll buy it.
I don't know if any of you guys had to do this in high school, but in my high school, you had to take a physical education credit to graduate. So normally, to get it out of the way, in 9th grade, all the boys would take PE, and all the girls would take dance. But sometimes, the really white boys would take dance. And you could always point them out during dance recitals. So I actually took PE my sophomore year because I went to a preparatory school in 9th grade. But that was okay because I fit in quite perfectly with all the other skinny white boys. And there's like this long moment in the first 10 minutes of class where all you do is sit in the locker room and wait until coach says, okay, let's do this. So one day we all got bored and just started flicking water bottle caps. You know, just the caps and the little... We just started flicking, you know, like little tiny frisbees. We took caps from the trash and we would just whoop-poo, shoot them at each other, you know? And it was all fun, you know, and no one really got hurt, and I'm pretty sure I'm the one who started it, but whatever. And then when we did our physical education class, it was like extra hard. Like we ran 2 laps instead of 1. And we had to do wall sits while holding medicine balls. And then afterwards, when we were all sweaty and tired, the teacher goes, you want to know why today was extra hard? It's because you're flicking water bottle caps at each other.
What?
Fast forward a couple, I don't know, a month, and these 2 kids get the idea to play a game called Bodies. And if you aren't familiar with that game, it's a game where you punch someone, that's it. You're not allowed to hit their face though, just their bodies. Which is why it's called Bodies. And you'd think at least one of us would be like, hey you guys. Oh wait, their voices should be squeaky.
Hey you guys, coach didn't like that we were throwing water bottle caps before. Maybe we shouldn't do this.
So, you know, I obviously couldn't let that happen without watching. And these 2 kids start playing, and 1 kid isn't even punching back, which is a strategy I would not use playing that particular game. And then all of a sudden, the dude taking the punches falls off his feet and hits his head on the hard tile and doesn't get up.
Did I win?
So we're a couple of young bros, and we're like, hey, bro. 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 So we had to tell the teacher, and the teacher got the nurse, and a little time passed, and at that point he did wake up a little. And the coach asked him what happened. And he knew he would get in trouble if he told the truth. So he lied and said,
I don't know, I just passed out and got all these punch marks.
Although it is possible he could have legitimately forgot. And then the coach asked the class what happened. And everyone was like, oh yeah, geez man, yeah, he just passed out. Yeah, I saw him, he just flopped down. And we almost got away with it, except 1 kid, I forget his first name, but his last name was like for Wilkins or something. Ah, and he had the stupidest bowl cut too. Ow, so stupid. He tells the coach, they were playing Bodies, and person A falcon punched person B. And then we already know we're in a whole heck of a trouble. But the nurse called the PE teacher and said, this kid needs to get his stuff. And coach said to the class, someone needs to get this kid his stuff.
I got it!
I'll get his stuff. And I'm told that the class had to do lunges down the track field. But I wouldn't know, because I took my sweet time getting him his stuff. And then a year later, I heard our PE teacher got fired. For separate reasons.
Yeah, I'm not really sure you should do a video about Arizona. I mean, only people from Arizona will think it's funny. I'm gonna do it anyway. So if you saw my bashes video, which I think was the fifth one in the French trip series, you'll know that I live in Arizona. So cool, I'm gonna talk about it. Pros and cons of living in Arizona. Pro. We got cacti. And in fact, we, and a tiny bit of Mexico, are the only place in the world with saguaro cactuses. I mean cacti. Boom. And as an extra bonus, they look really funny with Christmas decorations on them. Con. Not a lot of trees. Which I mean... Who needs trees? They just stand there. All they do is provide shade and oxygen. I guess you could climb them. I don't need that. Instead of trees, we have these things. Pro, we have In-N-Out. Okay, that store technically originated in California, but it's moved to here, and it's delicious. I actually applied there, and I got an interview. They didn't hire me, though. You guys are missing Con, the heat. It's unbearable. In the summer, you can expect the weather to be in triple digits. We don't have to be told not to leave our dog or babies inside cars, because we're already dying of heat stroke while the air conditioning is on. Pro, we don't have daylight savings. Which might seem like a good thing, but the only reason we don't is because con, the sun is trying to kill you. Yes, it's hot here. Pro, it's... I think we got the Grand Canyon, which is like one of the seven wonders of the world, I guess. And it can be seen from the Great Wall of China. I'm just kidding, that's not true. Oh, I got it. Pro. Citrus. We grow oranges, lemons, and grapefruits. They only get ripe in the winter, though. These are actually part of the three C's of Arizona. We have citrus, copper, cats, cacti, and cattle. And calcium, because of all the sunshine we're getting. Con. It hardly rains here. Yes, that's a bad thing, because I never learned how to close an umbrella. Okay, that's an exaggeration. Of course I know how to close an umbrella, but it was a very hard learning curve. And Arizona was not built to get rained on. When we do get rain, streets flood, schools close, and trees, well, these kinds of trees, fall. Pro. So, yeah, the summer can be unbearable, but winter is a total breeze. Winter is when the weather is perfect. While everyone else has to deal with stuff like this, here all we get is ripe lemons perfect for making cold lemonade with. And because our winters are so not really wintery, we have a bunch of old people who move down here in the winter and then move back to their summer home in Minnesota or whatever. They're like birds who migrate south in the winter, but like snowbirds, which is coincidentally what we call them. So really it's sort of a pro slash con. On one side, we have tolerable weather, but on the other side, old people. You know, I can't really think of any more pros, so we're just gonna say more cons. Apparently, Phoenix was ranked number 10 on the rudest cities in America, which, okay, how do you measure a city's rudeness level? Was the person making this list, like, seeking out rude people and comparing them to other cities, like, oh, this person in Phoenix called me a piece of shit, but this person in Wyoming only called me a piece of crap. So, I guess Phoenix just has more rude people. Add it to the list.
And also on the same list, we apparently had some of the worst drivers around, which I can sort of see because everyone here drives 7 to 15 miles over the speed limit. But I really hate slow drivers, so it's kind of a pro for me, but I guess it's a con. Also, did you guys know that a haboob is another name for a dust storm? And I know this because we've had to use that word before. And because we call them that, dust storms become 20 times more awesome. In fact, we're probably excited to see haboobs just so we can make jokes about them. As soon as we see a cloud of dust on the horizon, we all go, ah, guys, it's a haboob! You guys remember us? This is what we call it. And then we go inside and make jokes like, oh man, this is one massive haboob. And lastly, probably the worst con of all, the heat. I know I already mentioned it three times, but I don't think I've really driven my point home here. It's so hot here. I am literally sweating right now as I'm recording this, and that's not on the script.
Please get me out.
And some of you watching are probably like, but James, it's a dry heat, right? That means it's not as bad. Let me answer that question with another question, and then an answer. Do you know what else a dry heat is? Ovens. And volcanoes. And that's where I live.
You might be thinking that me giving you advice on pitching a show is insincere or not applicable because of that. But listen, there was still a whole lot of work that went into my pitch for a TV show, and even with all my subscribers, statistically, I still got turned down way more times than I got picked up. If Netflix is just green-lighting everyone with a big sub count, then why doesn't I Did a Thing have a show, huh? Why doesn't Mr. Beast have a Netflix show? Oh, actually, he's doing just fine. By the way, if you are someone with a lot of subscribers, don't just walk into a studio and say, "Hey, I have a lot of subs, give me a show," okay? Walk in and say, "Hey, I have a lot of subs and free merchandise for you," okay? Diversification is key. Networks like Netflix, Cartoon Network, and Nickelodeon, they're in the biz of making content for their platform and in turn getting you, the viewer, to watch said content on said platform, thus generating a perpetual money-making cycle that everyone, including you, benefits from. Now, the executives in charge don't have all the time to come up with every single show they're going to make, so they turn to the general public, open their doors, and will listen to anyone pitch them their idea for a television series. But even if you have an Emmy-winning idea, if you're not able to properly sell your idea and win over the hearts of the network executives, it's not going to get picked up and developed. Then your only option is to independently fund and develop your idea yourself. But what kind of a loser would do that? And thus the art of pitching a show is born. You could honestly teach a whole class about this. Now, obviously, you can't just walk into a studio empty-handed. Alright, big idea. What if we do a show where there's a talking alligator, right? And he's like, "Yo, what? I'm a crocodile." You gotta come prepared, but also not be over-prepared. I was actually surprised to learn this, but going into the pitch room with finished scripts, turnarounds of your characters, and plushies will actually hurt your chances of getting picked up. The reason for this is because executives will sometimes like to change parts of your show, and if you already have all the characters and story mapped out, they'll not want to pick you up because they feel like they can't change anything. You're not even supposed to write any scripts until after you get the green light, because the executives have to approve all the scripts you make and the writers that you want to hire. So if you ever pitch a show, just be open for changes. Which, I can attest, is a very different experience to what it's like on YouTube. What you do want to bring to the pitch is this super important document called a show Bible, and then you need to convert to that show's religion. The show Bible is a document that contains everything your audience needs to know about your show. In the beginning of a show Bible, there should be a 1-2 sentence description that covers the main synopsis of your show. It's kind of like an elevator pitch, but here in the biz, we call it a log line. I'll give you mine as an example. When James's parents move them to a tiny desert town where eccentric scientific minds have been brought together to do unfettered experiments, James finds himself surrounded by the children of these scientists and the offspring of their experiments. The result? Unlike in his last town, James is no longer the oddest kid around. I don't know if the show's been out by the time this video comes out, but we kinda lost the new in town theme. Like I said, the executives want to make changes. After the logline, you write a page-long backstory where you go more in-depth with your idea. Answer questions like, who are the characters? What are their goals? Where do they live? Just general stuff, because after the backstory page, you're going to write all about your characters. This is the part of the Bible where you can just go balls to the wall with details and description. Who, how, and why are your characters? What are their wants, needs, fears, flaws, likes, dislikes, and general personality traits? These are important traits to think about, even if a specific detail isn't going to be reflected in the show. Like in my Bible for the crocodile, Max, some of the things we said he liked were the rain, raw chicken, and laying on warm rocks in the sun. Now, I don't think he got to enjoy a single one of those things in the show, but these are the types of questions you have to answer to get the clearest idea of who your characters are. You should also include drawings of your characters. This can help show their personality and body language, but just keep them to doodles, because again, they're subjected to change. Next, there needs to be drawings and descriptions of specific locations that the characters spend a lot of time in. This will help show the overall world and tone of the show. And lastly, I know it's long, that's why it's called a show Bible and not a show pamphlet. You need to write out page-long episode ideas. not scripts. This will show the executives what a typical episode would look like and the direction and tone you want to go with the show. Honestly, there's so much that goes into a show bible. I'm really only scratching the surface. If you are genuinely interested in pitching a show, or even a little interested in cartoons, then I would highly recommend looking at other show bibles online for inspiration and how they should be formatted. It's pretty fun looking through older show bibles and seeing the earliest versions of your favorite cartoons. This is what Mermaid Man and Barnacle Bill were going to look like. I mean, look, isn't that cool? Unfortunately, you can't just hand an executive your show bible and silently wait for them to finish reading it. You also have to energetically and flawlessly pitch your show. Executives listen to like 9 pitches a day, so if you're not selling your show with 110% enthusiasm, they're gonna pass right over you. So you have to practice your pitch like your paycheck depends on it. Me and the showrunner I worked with, Ethan Banville, practiced our pitch so many times. We practiced in front of a mirror, to our family members. We filmed ourselves practicing, and then watched the footage, gave each other notes, and then burned the evidence. We memorized our whole Bible, but despite everything, the first time we pitched, I was still nervous. I had no idea what pitching a show would be like. We brought in our stapled Bible that we typed out on Microsoft Word, and I thought, this isn't enough. This Bible doesn't even have a spine. I still thought we needed to bring in finished scripts and character designs to show the executives how much thought we put into the show. But Ethan reassured me, no, the executives don't want to be overwhelmed with content. But when we got to the lobby, I saw the group ahead of us pitching their show, and they had cardboard cutouts of their characters, and they were handing the executives custom plushies, and I turned to Ethan, we are so underprepared. When we got inside, we pitched the show just like we practiced 1,000 times, and then the executive told me that no studio would ever want to work with a YouTuber. Yeah, sometimes they don't even wait to tell you in an email that they're going to pass. Sometimes they just get it over with right then and there. So, you know, not the best confidence boost for your first pitch. But we kept on pitching, and we kept hearing a lot of no's. And if you ever pitch, get ready to hear that response. Everyone in Hollywood has a story of being turned down by everyone and then finding the right home for their idea. And sometimes really talented people work for years on an idea and it goes nowhere. So the fact that I was even able to make something and it didn't get canceled, I'm incredibly grateful for. But getting a show greenlit is not the only way to get it made. You can always put in the work and develop something yourself. No, you won't have a network backing you with tons of money, but if you truly believe in your idea, you should at least put something out for the world to see and over time build your own audience and then, who knows, maybe even sell it to a network. But not the one who said they never work with a YouTuber. They're horrible. Okay, that's all the time I got. I gotta get back to watching Oddball streaming October 7th on my Netflix.
So I feel a bit obligated to talk about France. It was really fun, really. Okay, one thing though. Every meal is like super important in France. Except for breakfast for some reason. For lunch and dinner, everyone sat down together as a family and talked. But for breakfast, they were just like, here's a croissant. Okay, let's go. I mean, breakfast is only the most important meal of their day. And I was going to make a joke about how they have an entire aisle of cheese in the grocery store, but I realized back home we have an entire aisle for candy and ice cream. So whatever. We went to the Louvre, which was like so amazing. They had really cool art by famous people. They had the famous statue with no arms. They had these really fancy rooms because apparently people used to live here. And probably the most famous painting in the world, the Mona Lisa. That room was super crowded. And right behind the Mona Lisa, there was a super tall painting that probably took 20 years to make. The picture frame was as wide as my body. But were people crowded around this one taking pictures? No. I don't even know what this one's called. The American school system has failed me yet again. And as someone who likes to draw, I thought it was really cool to look at the amazing color and details. Also, I took a bunch of pictures of butts. Look, this is the really famous no arm one. Look at her butt. So I had a good time, but afterwards we went to the Picasso Museum, Modern Art Museum, and this other one. I forgot its name. It was French. And it's kind of weird going into these places as someone who likes to draw cartoons. Oh, I like the colors. They're pretty neat. And oh, putting the face on the side of the head. That's an interesting
design. But I kinda have to draw the line somewhere, Picasso. I mean, just look at this! Why is it framed? Someone framed this. And Picasso was a good artist. Shoot, he's better than me. So why did they go with this stuff to hang up? Would you call this his best work? It's not just Picasso. Look at the modern art museums. My favorite piece was the painting of a black ring. In fact, I loved it so much that I drew over it in my phone and probably spent more time in thought than the actual artist. I'm not saying the more real a painting looks, the more artsy it is. Wait, yes I am. I mean, look at my drawings. No, seriously, look at them. Their heads are super round and they're so white they can't dance. If I entered an art contest against Leonardo da Vinci, he would win! Because his stuff took talent. It's not easy to draw something that looks exactly like it does in real life. But cartoons? They're easy. They're so easy. And I know I'm leaving out paintings with color schemes and forms. Now, after seeing this, I've come up with something called the Keith Haring Principle to help people like me better understand modern art. In the late 70s, a man named Keith Haring drew graffiti in subway stations and had sort of a unique design. Whenever he started to draw graffiti, he never thought about what the finished product was going to be. He just drew whatever he felt like. He ended up making thousands of them, and people started to notice his unique characters. Soon he got more and more famous and popular. Now he's at the point where you can buy t-shirts and mugs of his drawings. And I think that's really cool. They're interesting designs, and I would wear them. Do they belong in a museum? No. Keith made thousands of these small, simple drawings. They're still art, but not art people should pay to see. They should pay to wear and drink out of it. And by the way, this stuff is in no way research, so I'm talking completely out of my butt right now. But I think Picasso and the circle painting should be on t-shirts, or kids' books, or even webcomics. So people would say, hey, I like your shirt. Thanks, I like the design, and would never frame it and hang it up on my wall.
I just wanted to say thanks. I'm glad you came along, partner.
I wasn't happy with the lighting in the last video, so I might have gone overboard for this one. If you only watch this video for the sprinkles, hold on. I need to get serious with my audience. Guys, do you like my haircut? Jaden's mom actually did it for me. Okay, but seriously, guys, something big just happened. Dwayne The Rock Johnson retweeted one of my comics. Woo! But can we talk about how the comic that got The Rock's retweet has less likes than the tweet I made about The Rock retweeting one of my comics? But also, as some of you might know, my channel recently hit 1 million subscribers. The big 100000. Which is a little terrifying. Here's a YouTube trivia question for all the little kiddies in my audience. Who was the first YouTuber to get 1 million subscribers? I'll give you a hint.
Okay. Hey, it's Fred!
When Fred posted his 1 million subscriber special, I was only 12 years old at the time, almost 13. But I remember watching that as a little kid and just thinking, whoa, 1 million subscribers, that's so many. But now, I'm not feeling how I thought I would feel. Maybe I'm just too young, or maybe I just don't feel anything. I watched YouTube all the time growing up. Charlie the Unicorn, Potter Puppet Pals, The Gummy Bear Song, Knox Corner, Salad Fingers. Those videos were my jam, and now it's so weird to think that my videos could be someone else's jam. I know you guys all want to see the sprinkles, so... So some of you might be new to this channel, and what I do for subscriber milestones is I pour however many subscribers we have onto a cake. So that way you can look at the cake and see you. Well, unless you subscribed after this video came out. When I started this tradition, I didn't realize just how many people were subscribed to me, or I didn't realize how big sprinkles were. And also, I might be using some incorrect math. In my first video, I counted 1,000 sprinkles, and then I weighed them, which was probably fine for the 100,000, but now I'm using the same data to count to 1,000,000. So I thought, I'll just get twice as much as I did last time, and hopefully that should be good. So I have my 42 pounds of sprinkles here, but just in case we still don't have enough... Here's the infinity sprinkle. Another one.
Another one. Another one. Man, I can't believe these are all of them. Psych! Do it. Woo! Hooray! And then we sell a little bit more right here. Is this a million sprinkles? Probably. Just sprinkle some on. Let's get some on this cake to eat. Oh, I only grabbed frosting. I felt it. Ah, yeah.
If you're subscribed, one of these is you. One of them. Right? Oh, I feel great. That's a shame we had to waste a perfectly good cake.
Good riddance. Ah, he's back. Welcome back, dude. Whoop, we got another one.
Man! This is a lot of people. I think this is the first subscriber special where I actually have that much in sprinkles.
Look, some of you are on me. Hello, boys.
Delicious.
There goes my feet again.
This is on my foot. Thanks for subscribing. Oh, this trampoline is probably ruined.
So now I'm going to talk about how I started out on YouTube. It's going to get maybe a little serious. My journey as a YouTuber did not start out on YouTube. I used to post my comics on Tumblr first. And before that, I used to draw comics in school. And actually, I still have every single one of them. Now, a lot of these weren't that funny. Mrs. Johnson, I have some horrible news.
What?
It's about your son.
Is he doing drugs?
He joined a gang? Robbed a bank? He listens to Nicki Minaj? The horror! Okay, that one was a little funny.
Hi, my name is Kevin. It happened to me when I was in the car. I was driving and before I knew it happened. I felt violated, like I was cheated of my life. It was horrible. Let it all out.
And then you see that he was in a Nicki Minaj support group. I did not like Nicki Minaj growing up, apparently. But for some reason, I still drew them. A lot.
It was in 2009, so I was 13 years old when I started drawing these. And I kept drawing them until I was 16 years old. And at that time, I wanted to take my comics onto the next level. I wanted to put them on the internet. That's another thing about me. I wasn't an art kid growing up. You see all these talented artists saying, oh, when I was a little kid, I just couldn't be separated from my pen and paper.
Not me.
But I think that just goes to show you that if you work hard at something, then you can be good at anything. So I got a tablet for my 16th birthday. It was a Bamboo Create. It was about $100. And after messing around for about a month, I posted my very first comic. And I hated it. But I've seen some people defend it, so... Starting on Tumblr was a slow process. It wasn't until my fourth comic that I got one follower that wasn't my friend.
It was a porn blog.
But I used to pour hours into these comics, and it sucked seeing my hard work not get any attention. And I haven't really told anyone this, but it was around December of 2012 that I wanted to quit. I was upset no one was looking at my comics. I was upset my comics were looking really bad. If you look at my Tumblr for that month, I made 4 posts. 3 of them were me experimenting with my art because I just wanted to make it look good. And the one comic I made for that month, I had to force myself to finish it. And for the description I wrote, it's been a long and busy week. And I wish I could tell you what motivated me to keep going, but I don't remember. For some reason, I just didn't quit, and man, am I glad I didn't! Can you imagine if I did quit?
I'd probably still be in college.
But I kept at it, I kept drawing and growing my audience slowly, and I had around 100 followers. But then one day when I posted this comic, for whatever reason, it just exploded. And I broke 1,000 followers. I remember logging in and just seeing the numbers just spike up. And I remember being so surprised, I was like literally like thrown back in my chair. Then a few comics later, this one blew up. And from then, I just kept steadily growing. So I used to watch YouTube and Captain Sparkles all the time when I was drawing my comics. But then one day I was like, I want to do that. So then in August of 2014, so 2 years of making comics on the internet, I posted my first video. And I hate it. I already had around 50,000 followers on Tumblr, so when I posted the video, like, my subscriber count immediately jumped to like 2,000, so that was nice. And then another 2 years went by, I got retweeted by Dwayne, and now we're here with a million. Another thing that I haven't mentioned in a video yet, I got this a month ago. It's a little late.
So maybe we can just add another zero right there and put a comma right here.
Yeah.
Don't worry, it comes off.
And if you want this amazing t-shirt made by an amazing person, you're going to have to go on to Tony's website. Link in the description now that I... just because.
Also, I just wanted to show you the wall of fan art. So, you know, if your fan art didn't get featured in a video, then maybe got featured in this board thing. Also, here's just something fun that I think you want to see. So this is where I would record audio. Just right here. I would sit down here, and there would be a microphone if it wasn't over there. So, yeah, that's it.
Parents want their children to be well-rounded, but the problem that every parent faces is that 7-year-olds would rather watch any video on YouTube than learn how to play the violin. So, how do these concerned parents get their children to be more active? Answer, they force them. Now, forcing your kids into activities isn't a bad thing. In fact, overall, it's extremely helpful. Forcing kids into doing something they don't want to do is the only way we can get them to go to school. Okay, saying that out loud kind of sounded wrong. Doing extra activities, especially at a young age, not only teaches you important skills, but it also teaches you what your interests are. How are you gonna know if you don't like ballet unless you try it? I've tried it, and now I can say with confidence, ballet's not for me. I'm sure I'm not the only one who's had to deal with parents signing you up for sports, instruments, and more sports. I think when you're really young, you don't realize that you have a choice. Your parents just start taking you to soccer practice every Wednesday, and you think, oh, okay, I guess I'm doing this now. But all the activities I was forced into, while I never got invested in any of them, I'm still glad I did them, you know? I forgot how old I was when my mom signed me up for soccer, but I was little enough for the goals to look like this. I can't tell you how many games we won or how many goals I scored. It was probably close to zero. Because I ultimately didn't care about soccer. The only thing I cared about was getting a treat after every game. Because I earned it. I know some kids who really enjoyed playing soccer. I forget which video I mentioned this, but back in the day, there was this kid I knew named Micah. He used to live in the house directly behind mine, and we were on the same Little League soccer team. He was really good at soccer, probably better than I'll ever be, and he still plays to this day. Well, okay, it's been 4 years since I last talked to him, but he was still playing soccer to this 4 years ago. Now, did Micah's parents initially force him into playing soccer? Probably, I didn't ask. But if his parents never forced him into it, he would have never known how good he was at the game and how much he enjoyed it. But that's enough about Micah. This is my channel. I don't remember how I stopped playing soccer. I just stopped showing up to the practices 1 year, and then I never played again. And then my mom put me into Boy Scouts, and that was a lot better because it wasn't competitive and camping is awesome and I made some dumb videos about it. So it was a return investment. Another activity my mom put me in was this martial art class called Aikido. I'm honestly surprised I've gotten 107 videos without mentioning Aikido once. Probably because it was boring and nothing interesting happened. My mom put me and my twin sister into Aikido, and we both agreed that it was boring and we didn't like it. So we decided not to remind my mom whenever she had to take us to class. And surprisingly, she forgot most of the time. Okay, look, whenever the sensei was talking, we had to sit on our knees, and that gets uncomfortable after 2 seconds. What is Aikido, I hear you asking? Aikido is a special form of martial arts in that it doesn't teach you how to fight. Aikido is all about self-defense and to also not hurt the attacker. You know those self-defense techniques that are like, if someone tries to attack you, use your keys as a knife and stab them. Aikido is not that. An Aikido master will take an attacker's arm, spin them around, and then pin them down to the floor. Now that sounds really cool on rice paper, like if someone goes to attack you, and then you block their punch and pin them to the ground, and you just give them a look like, you wanna take me on, kid? I've already got you pinned down. Now I'm not gonna hurt you, cause I'm that powerful. But if you ever attempt to attack me or my clan ever again, I will be forced to use 10% of my power and break your spine in half.
And I think my mom saw that Aikido was nonviolent and taught self-defense, and she thought it was a better activity than learning how to kick someone in the face. But after doing some research on Aikido, I've learned that it's not really... what's the right word? Respected in the martial art community. There's a lot of people saying that the techniques of Aikido don't work against a real attack, and that if someone's really attacking you, you can't reasonably pin them down without hurting them. So it's probably a better idea to just punch back. And some people who are in Aikido think that their style of fighting is more civil and the more eloquent way of fighting, or non-fighting. So there's a tad bit of elitism in the martial art community. Now, surprisingly, I've never been in a real fight, so I can't really comment on what the more effective martial art is. I'm sure different situations call for different responses, but I don't think I'm wrong when I say that Aikido is the vegans of martial arts. After Aikido, the next thing I was forced to learn was an instrument. My parents didn't force me to do this, it was the American education system that did. In 5th and 6th grade, everyone had to take a band class, and we all chose different instruments to play, and I went with a flute. And as soon as I was given the flute, I traded it with Priscilla, who chose percussion, and that's what I did for the next 2 years. Compared to the rest of the instruments, percussion was very easy on my lungs. And it was okay if we were bad at the instrument, because we were in the very back. The first set of songs we learned was on this metal xylophone thing, but I think the teacher thought everyone was so bad at that instrument that the rest of the songs we learned was on this drum. Just one drum, it looked like this. So while everyone else had to learn face and every good boy deserves fudge and whatever these lines connecting the notes mean, we cool kids in the back only had to memorize three notes. A hit on the drum, a hit on the side of the drum, and not hitting the drum. Now those are my favorite notes. Drums are so great, nothing beats the drums. Drums are easy. So my parents tried to get me to do extra activities, but I never did more than what I was told to do. But that's okay. You should at least try new things, and if it's not something you enjoy, well, at least you tried. Now, with all the activities I did, I still spent plenty of my free time doing some other things. Okay, I played a lot of Neopets and RuneScape, and as much as I enjoyed these games, I would say overall, they didn't make me a more rounded person. Unless you count what they did to my horrible posture. People will spend their free time doing what they enjoy, and entertainment is designed to be entertaining. And while it's good to take some time doing things you enjoy, just like everything in life, it's all about balance. I think there's a very clear and important difference between a hobby and an addiction. If you enjoy playing video games and binging Netflix in your free time, then do that. Keyword being free time. You still need to set time to sleep, work, and socialize. And take showers. If I can smell that you were just binging a show, then that's gotta change! While I was working on this video, I wondered why it was more acceptable to be good at chess than it was World of Warcraft, because at its core, chess and Warcraft are the same thing. A game. But if you spend all your time playing one of these games, and it gets in the way of you being a functional human being, that's when it becomes an addiction. And I would bet you one crisp dollar bill that more people have gotten addicted to Warcraft than chess. And that's why I believe there's a bad stigma with that game. Also, I don't know how WoW works, but I know in chess you need to have at least one friend. If I could go back in time, I would tell my younger self to not play Neopets and RuneScape as much as I did. I would have told me, hey, you should try out other things too, like rollerblading or the flute. Youth is the best time to learn what you love and where your passions lie. You kids have no bills, no expectations, you're not tired all the time, and everyone's telling you to follow your dreams. But not me, I'm 22. My life is practically over. I can't choose any more hobbies. I wasted my childhood. I'm not saying don't play video games or don't watch YouTube. I understand that my main demographic is people who watch YouTube. But like I said before, it's all about the balance. Trademark. So go out there, try new things, join a club, go on a walk, draw something. I'm biased, but make a comic, write a short story, find a recipe online and cook something, or read a book. Take breaks, yes, but never stop learning. And when you're an adult, you can force your children to learn, too. Let's pretend you get on a bus and it's super crowded. The only spot that's open is between two strangers. So you sit down between two people you never met and everyone is fine. Everyone's keeping to themselves, no one's making eye contact, it's perfect. Sure, your shoulders are touching, but that's just what happens. That's part of the bus-going experience, you poor person. But then, at the very next stop, aisle seat guy gets off. So now you and window seat guy are sitting right next to each other. But since you're in the middle, you have to be the one to decide, Do you move or not? I honestly don't know what the right thing to do in that situation is. I'm conflicted. Because if you move, it would be silently telling the other person, hey, you're disgusting. I can't stand having our shoulders touch any longer, and I'm glad to finally get away from you. Ugh. But on the other hand, if I was the window seat guy, I would want the middle seat guy to become the new aisle seat guy. I wouldn't see moving as rude. I would just want his gross, disgusting body as far away from me as possible. That's not rude. But on the other hand, maybe I'm overthinking everything and most people don't even mind being this close to another human and they aren't struggling socially, I don't know. Now imagine that same situation, but with urinals. If you're in the middle urinal, do you move halfway through to the other urinal? Because I would. Are you supposed to talk to people when you're sitting 2 inches away from them? I always felt like I should say something, like, hey, did you see the game last night? I didn't, I was too busy drawing cartoons. But I realized that this is a two-way street. I'm worried about not talking to someone, but they're not talking to me either. We both agreed that there's this unwritten contract between us that we're not even going to look at each other. It got me thinking about strangers and specifically how I treat them. And how I can make money off of them. Hey-oh! I'm just kidding. That was a joke. For most of my life, I would go out of my way to avoid talking to people. I would stay in my lane, mind my own business, no eye contact. If everyone's using a urinal, I'd have to pee tomorrow. Yes, I'm lonely. But now that YouTube's the thing, I'm interacting with strangers more often than I've had to in my entire life. So I've been thinking a lot about strangers. And first of all, I think the word stranger is already an insulting label for someone just because you don't know their name. Oh, I don't know this person? They're a stranger. They're strange. I'm the normal one. They're the freaks. They probably murder people with an axe. That's always the go-to profession of a stranger, an axe murderer. But the people you see throughout your day are all humans with their own hopes and dreams, and some of them may hope to kill you, but you'll never know because you didn't ever take the time to get to know them. So I think that the people you see throughout your daily life aren't strangers. They're potential friends. Except for the weird ones, obviously. Stay away from them. And yes, I'm telling you to judge people based on their appearance. They're the ones that chose to wear anime shirts in public, okay? So back to the bus scenario. I'm sitting right next to this fellow human being. So far, there's not a single reason why I should dislike this person. But I don't know why, if you put him and me on a bus next to each other, I want him as far away from me as possible. Just stop touching my shoulder! So that was the last time I took the bus. Unfortunately, that's not the only place you meet strangers. One time I was at Home Depot and I was looking for jumper cables and I couldn't find them anywhere. And I don't know if I'm the only human that's like this, but I will try everything in my power to not talk to a sales associate. I guess it's because I know they get paid minimum wage and their life sucks and I just want to leave them alone and not make their job any harder than it has to be. But asking employees for help isn't even bothering them that much. In fact, I think it's part of their job. Like, what's the worst thing they're going to say? Ugh, you don't know where one specific item is? Everyone else knows. Did you even look? They're in the jumper cable aisle, idiot. No one's gonna think that. So feeling desperate, I mustered up what little courage I had and swaggered up to someone wearing an orange vest and said, excuse me, do you know where the jumper cables are? I don't work here. Oh, you don't work here? And then he walked away. And then he waddled away, waddle, waddle. And then the very next day, bum, bum, bum. So I think the logical thing to do in that situation would have been to find someone who does work there. But I left the store because I didn't want to run into that same guy again. But I also bought a hammer because I didn't want people to think that I stole something. So... oh, yeah. And by the way, if you wear an orange vest to Home Depot, just expect people to ask you for help. Same goes for people who wear red shirts at Target. You'd think I'd learn from my mistakes, but no, I have a bunch more examples. When my book came out, my publisher said that it was going to be carried at Barnes & Noble, and I thought that was super duper cool and wanted to see my book in the wild. Not to buy or anything, just to have a look at. So I took my friend Adam from Something Else YT, and we went to the local Barnes & Noble and started our search. We looked in the humor section, didn't find it. Then we checked the new release section, it wasn't there either. Then we looked at the best-selling section, then the religious section, but we couldn't find the book anywhere. So either the publisher lied, or they had already sold out. But just to be sure, I asked one of the workers, hey, do you guys have a book by The Odd Ones Out? He kind of looks like this. And the worker typed something out on his computer and said, oh yeah, we got those in the back, we just haven't put them out yet. So then he went to the back room, brought out a copy and handed it to me saying, here you go, kid. And I thought, Well, frick. I can't just hand it back to the guy and say, oh no, that's okay. I didn't want to buy it. I just wanted to have a look at it. Do you know how inconvenient that would be? So the only less awkward option I could think of was to buy my own book. And you know what? I'd get a couple cents back from this purchase, so it wouldn't have been a total loss. But Adam, being the more sensible one, said,
dude, this is ridiculous. You have to come clean.
So then he went to the worker and said,
so he actually wrote this book? He just wanted to get a look at it, like, in the wild.
And the worker said, oh, that's so cool. Do you want to sign our copies? And then I thought, well, hold on. You're not even going to ask me for my ID? How do you know I actually wrote this book and I'm not some guy trying to deface someone else's? And then the guy gave me a whole stack of my books and I signed them all. Last story before I go. I was in the hallway of a building and me and this potential friend crossed paths. He said, hello. And I was going to respond with, hello, and how's it going? But I combined the two and ended up saying, how? And then I jumped out a window and fell to my death. I can't rationalize that behavior. Maybe I spend too much time on the computer and I'm not used to looking at real people's faces, but I'm trying to change. Don't get me wrong, going to conventions and meeting fans has helped me a lot with talking to people. Granted, those conversations are usually one-sided and a real stranger won't already know who I am, but they've still helped me. Now, you might be expecting me to give you advice on overcoming social anxiety, but if you watch this video, you know I'm not the most qualified to give that advice, but I'll try my best. I know it's hard to feel confident, and I'm still working on it, but you have to understand that we're all people, and we all have things that we're struggling with. And in reality, we're not all watching or caring about every little thing that other people do. We're all too busy worrying about what other people think of us. So with enough practice and believing in yourself, you can show the world your true colors, and I think you'll find that people are a lot nicer than you think. So if you're the middle seat guy on the bus, and you have to decide whether or not to move, do whatever you want, no one cares. Just stop touching my shoulders! I wanted to make this video about 6 months ago, but then I thought, no, I'll save it for Halloween, because of theming, or whatever, I don't know. Shut up, I don't have to explain myself. I'm excited to tell you this story!
Wow!
So, haunted houses. I think haunted houses, they're fine, but I don't want to brag or anything, but since the age of 16, I've never been in a haunted house that I was scared of. Granted, all the haunted houses I've been in were free and didn't have me sign a waiver, and when I was little, sure, I was terrified of haunted houses. It's just, I don't know, I think I kept telling myself that none of it was real, and then when I grew up, I just always knew that none of it was real. When you can see the severed hand is made of plastic, all the tension you previously had is kinda lost. And sure, I still get startled at the jump scares, but since they don't stab you or anything, it's always awkward afterwards. Hello? I'm just gonna walk this way now. Or maybe I don't get scared because I don't feel emotions anymore. Who knows? But there's one haunted house experience during my senior year of high school that I will never forget because it was probably one of the most traumatizing things I've ever seen. I haven't seen that many traumatizing things. And also, I won't forget it because I'm about to immortalize the experience by making a YouTube video about it. Alright, my senior year, I was part of my school's drama club. I was a theater kid. And the clubs at the school got to help do some of the activities for the school's fair. The whole school is putting on a fair, probably to raise money or something. It seems that schools are always in need of some extra cash. Have you ever noticed that? So the football team gotta do the dunk tank, the band kids, like, face painted or something, I don't remember, it's not important. And the theater kids, since the fair is in October and that's Halloween's month, we gotta put on a haunted house. Cool! The drama club was separated into groups, and we would each be a scary part in the haunted house. And we gotta make the haunted house inside the school, so we had a lot of area to work with, and there was a lot of space in between each scary thing. My group, what we did, is we dressed up as vampires, but scary vampires, and we sat at this dinner table, and we decorated it with fake organs, goblets filled with blood, red Kool-Aid, and we had this freshman girl that was laying on top of the table, and we put fake organs coming out of her, you know, to make it look like we were eating her, because vampires eat people. Okay, saying that out loud, I realize that doesn't make any sense. Why would a group of vampires be eating someone? They don't do that. We put a yellow shade over the light above for a good spoopy atmosphere. We had a smoke machine, some ambient Halloween music playing. Spooky, scary skeletons and shivers down your spine. Our group was pretty legit. Whenever a group of people walked by, we would just silently stare at them, and then the freshman on the table would scream at the top of her lungs. She was really good at screaming, by the way. And since we had so much space in between each of the scary parts, when they walked past us, we would get up and chase them. Yeah, it was fun. Okay, so you have to understand that theater kids are very loud, extroverted people. I need to tell you about this one kid who was in my vampire group. We'll just name him Balake. Yeah, Balake. Balake and I were both part of the school's improv club, so we were both pretty funny people, except Balake was just out there. He was loud. It seemed he was just always screaming. I didn't have any classes with him, but he was obviously the high self-esteem class clown kind of kid. So Balake, being the loud and more popular kid, he got to sit at the head of our table. We had done the haunted house for about 2 hours at this point, and I want you to think what it's like to go inside a haunted house. Just going in for 5 minutes, that will already make me feel uncomfortable and sweaty. All the strobe lights, the smoke, and the freshmen over here who had to be constantly screaming bloody murder. Again, you did a good job, freshmen. And we were supposed to get a break sometime in the middle, but since the haunted house was so popular, we didn't get one break. So I'm a little loopy after doing all this for so long, right? I was totally not ready for what was about to happen. This group of people walk in, and we do our normal thing. We get up and we chase them, but Balake got pretty physical with this one little boy. Like, he kind of shook him up a bit. And I didn't see exactly what happened, but apparently this little boy was holding a fish in a plastic baggie. You know those little tiny fish that are actually supposed to be used as food for bigger fish that you can win as prizes in fairs, and 99% of the time the fish die within 2 weeks because you don't have the right aquarium equipment, so you just put them in water and watch them slowly die? You know those fish? I didn't think people were allowed to bring their new pet fish into the haunted house, but I guess he smuggled it in or something. I didn't see the kid drop the fish. Maybe Balake slapped it out of his hands. That could have happened. I just heard a scream, and I saw a fish flopping around in a puddle on the floor. Fish look like they're in so much pain when they're out of water. I don't flail around uncontrollably when I go swimming. Like, calm down, fish. I'm silently panicking, because the fish looks like he's going to die in 3 seconds if we don't do something. I start thinking of places we can put the fish. The toilet. But Balake, without saying anything, just immediately bent down, cupped the tiny fish in his hands, he ran back to the table, he put the fish in an empty goblet, and then he poured red Kool-Aid into the cup. Nah, I'm just kidding. He got a water bottle from under the table because they gave us water bottles, and the fish was fine, ladies and gentlemen. It all happened so fast, and thanks to Balake's quick thinking, he saved this little kid's fish. The kid was still a couple of feet down the hall. Balake took the goblet in his hands, he walked it over to the kid, he reached out his hand to give the kid his fish. And then he just chugged the drink! Balake! He drank the fish! And this little kid let out the most blood-curdling scream. It sounded like this kid just watched his pet get swallowed by a complete stranger. It was honestly the loudest scream I heard that night. I bet the next group of people behind these guys were thinking, oh man, whatever's next must be really scary to get that kid to scream like that. The kid started trying to attack Balake, and I'm sure if he had the correct tools, he would have murdered him. Balake eventually spat out the fish.
Why?
He didn't swallow it, thankfully. He just kept it swimming in his mouth.
But I mean, that's what you gotta do when you're working in a haunted house. You have to scare people any way you can.
I was just a bystander, and I still wake up in a cold sweat thinking about it. Turns out this kid was actually Balake's little brother, so at least he didn't do this to a complete stranger. Man, you really gotta appreciate what lengths older brothers go through to torment the little brother. Balake's little brother, you might be watching, but I was there, dude. I know what pain you go through. I have an older brother, too. I know what it's like to be Luigi. I mean, he never swallowed any of my pets. He would just steal my food. He also never let me win in Super Smash Bros. Anytime I was about to win, he would turn off the Nintendo. But I mean, I'm fine. Look how I turned out. Science fair. I was talking to a friend saying, oh, I know, I can do a video about the science fair and, you know, talk about how much it sucks. And she said, oh, at my school, we didn't do the science fair.
What?
That got me wondering. Did other people not do the science fair? So I did my own science experiment on Twitter. I ran a poll and asked you guys if you even did the science fair and whether or not you enjoyed doing it. And 58% of you said you didn't have to do the science fair. Like, that was way more than I expected. That's the majority. I've renamed this group of people the lucky ones. And when I asked if you enjoyed doing it, 21% of you said you did enjoy it, and 21% of you said you didn't. I know Twitter polls aren't the most accurate sources of data, but I think it's safe to say that this is a pretty split issue. Now, I'm in the 21% of people who didn't enjoy the science fair. And don't get me wrong, I love science. Well, okay, that might not be true. I really hated biology and chemistry. That was just a mess. But physics was okay. Maybe I don't like science. I just like space and watching these. Bill and Neil, they're my buddies. Except Neil did hurt my feelings one time. We'll get back to that later. Alright, so let me briefly go over what the science fair is for you lucky ones who didn't have to deal with that. Apparently, it's a very American thing, right guys?
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Basically, we started doing them, I want to say, around 4th grade, and we would do this every year up until the 10th grade. The whole class would spend all day researching a topic that interests them, and then we would have to come up with a question that we could run an experiment on. An example of these questions are, does the temperature of a battery affect how long it will last? What color light produces the most heat? How does the shape of a rocket's fins affect its travel? All of which are projects I did. Basically, this was supposed to teach you about the scientific method, but what it really did was teach us how to procrastinate and make up data. And on paper, you might think, oh, that sounds like fun. I wish my school did the science fair. No! Here are some flaws with the science fair. First, you got the option to work with a partner. And of course, you want to work with a partner so you can split up the work and not do as much. Now, since I didn't have any friends, I would partner up with someone that no one else wanted to partner up with. But they wouldn't do any of the work. I only did the science fair with a partner once. From 5th grade on, I did my science fair projects alone. The second problem is that we had to come up with a question all on our own. And you gotta understand, we were just kids. We don't think as cognitively as scientists do, okay? Just a couple years ago, we still believed in Santa Claus. Except for me, my family didn't do Santa Claus. And now you want us to wonder if the ratio of a cylinder will affect its buoyancy? Like, come on. And also, we don't have access to any resources. You know, the science fair is a lot like an episode of Mythbusters. But what sets apart the Mythbusters from your average 4th grader is that they're really smart engineers who have access to explosives, while we can't even drive to Walmart ourselves. We have to ask our parents to take us. One year, I wanted to do an experiment on a certain type of soil, so I did research, I wrote everything all up, but then when I went to Home Depot to buy the soil, they didn't even have it! So I had to pick a new topic and start all over again. Now do you see why I think the science fair sucks? So okay, I think it would have been better in elementary school if we were assigned a question. I know the whole point of these things is about discovery, but we're all stupid, okay? I guess if you're anything like me and you chose a crappy question, you'll have a bad science fair. My very first science fair, after all day researching possible questions, me and my partner came up with a question, what time of the day is the hottest? Now, I already know the answer to this question, and in 4th grade, I'm sure I already knew the answer to this question too. It's noon. Like, I don't need to run an experiment on that. In fact, I can just go to Google and seriously just type weather and boom, there's my data right there. No need for an experiment. But the science fair isn't just finding the answer to your question. No, 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 no. First, after you research the topic, you have to write a hypothesis. A hypothesis is basically you guessing what you think the result of the experiment will be, but you don't write it down as I think this will happen. No, you write it like you know what's gonna happen. A formula. Formula, science. For a perfect hypothesis is, if blank, then blank because blank. Let's use my battery experiment. I said, does the temperature of a battery affect how long it will last? So after doing research about how batteries work, a hypothesis for this experiment would be, if two AA batteries are used at different temperatures, then the battery in the hot temperature will not last as long because the battery's fluid will evaporate, which damages the internal structure of the battery. Oh, and spoiler alert, no, it doesn't. I put two batteries outside, two in the freezer, I let them sit, and then I plugged them into my Game Boy Advance, and they lasted the exact same amount of time. I learned nothing. So you also have to write up the materials you use for the experiment, then you have to write up the steps to do the experiment, the procedures, and you also have to write an introduction, basically just bullcrapping what you're going to do. Then you do the experiment, aka the fun part. Make sure you write down your results because you have to make a graph. You have to. How do you make a graph to show that batteries at different temperatures lasted the same amount of time? They did. You think you're done, right? But no, you gotta write up the results as if your graph didn't already perfectly depict that, and a conclusion. The conclusion is like the most insulting part of the science fair. You basically go through this checklist of questions that you answer. Was your hypothesis correct? No, my hypothesis was not correct. What mistakes could you have made in your experiment? I don't know, maybe I took the batteries out of the cold and hot and put them in a room temperature Game Boy and in a couple of minutes they both went to a room temperature. I don't know. How can others use this information you found? What do you mean? All the batteries lasted the same. I don't think anyone is going to put their batteries in their freezer to have literally no effect. Alright, and then you take everything you wrote, print it out, and then slap it onto a poster board. And everyone, and I mean everyone, would use construction paper as a border around the text to give the poster board a good aesthetic. I think the second most fun part of the science fair was choosing what word art font you would use for your title. Oh, and by the way, the teachers told us to have a creative title to catch people's attention. Like, that was part of the assignment. We got graded on the title. Basically, they were telling us to create puns for a grade. If you're doing a project that's measuring plant growth, Ready, Set, Grow, that was a very popular choice. And then everyone took their poster boards and presented it in front of the whole class. Those were the three most boring days of science ever, except for the day you presented. That was the most stressful day. And then after all of that, everyone in the school put their poster board up in the cafeteria, and you you know, then it was fun to walk around and see how other people decorated their poster board, and you could always tell whose mom helped them. So, overall, I didn't have a good time. Those 21% of people who did enjoy it, I'm glad you liked it, but me and the other 21% of people think you're huge nerds. And when I asked that Twitter question, I had some people messaging me saying, yeah, I got third place and all I had was a cup of dirt, ha 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 ha, and that made me wonder... Wait, it was a competition? So I think the key to a good science fair is to come up with a good question and also do a topic that you actually enjoy. One science fair, I did an experiment on rockets, and I had a blast. That would have been a good title. But for another year, I did What Color Light Is the Hottest? I just shined a lamp at a thermometer and switched out the bulbs. And I'll let Neil say what he thinks about that whole project.
Okay, red light is warmer than blue light. Interesting discovery, but not exactly revolutionary.
Neil, yeah, just completely discredit all my research. I'm fine. So, moral of the story, if you need an idea for a science fair project, do it on rockets. You don't even need a question. Just launch model rockets.
Here's a little social interaction life hack I've discovered. If you're meeting someone new and you want to get to know them better, and you see any semblance of a tattoo peeking out of their sleeve, compliment it. If that person doesn't want to talk about their tattoos, they'll say, "Oh, thank you." Anyway, this is my stop, but if they do want to talk about their tattoos, their face will light up, and then they'll do the rest of the talking. I realize that by giving you this advice, now anytime I compliment someone else's tattoos, it will seem disingenuous, but it's not, most of the time. I love all of your tattoos. That's right, I'm talking to you. I love your tattoos, dude. Whether it's how you got the tattoo, the meaning behind the tattoo, or being a tattoo of something you like, every tattoo is a story. And most people love telling stories about themselves. I wouldn't know anything about that, personally. I never understood why some people liked talking about their tattoos until I got one of my own. What, you think I'm gonna make a whole video about tattoos when I didn't even have any? That's right, I'm a marked man, Mom. What are you gonna do about it? Stop unconditionally loving me? Yeah, right. Wait, what are you doing with that cheese grater? Okay, but in all seriousness, can you make sure Grandma doesn't see this video, Mom? I don't want to upset her on the way out. Back in the day, tattoos used to be a symbol of rebellion and meant you couldn't get a job. No regrets, baby! But I feel like tattoos are getting more and more accepted, if not expected. I'll see a jacked, bald guy covered in tattoos and think, okay, yeah, he was meant to look like that. For me, the idea of being a badass tattooed guy with a sketch pad and a beanie and ripped jeans and a beaded bracelet always seemed cool to me. But like most people, when it came to tattoos, I had reservations. Ooh, this is gonna be on my body forever? What if I hate it? I had an idea once of getting these 5 Magic the Gathering symbols tattooed on my forearm. I even dotted them out in Sharpie once just to give them a test drive. But I ultimately decided not to get them because I was worried in 5 years I would go, oh, these? I was really into Magic the Gathering in my 20s. Not anymore, though, so now every morning I wake up with impending feelings of shame and remorse that I even decided to get this thing. And I didn't want that to happen, even though I've been playing Magic for over 15 years, and it means a lot to me, and I'm going to be buried with my Sliver deck, and... Alright, maybe I should just get it. Even though people know that tattoos are permanent, there are still way more bad tattoos than there should be. One time, I saw this picture of someone's tattoo on a bad tattoo subreddit, and I thought it'd be funny to prank my family group chat by photoshopping that tattoo onto my arm. And then I thought it'd be funny to post that picture onto Instagram. I didn't think anyone would fall for this poor excuse of a Photoshop job, but then the internet and my family proved me wrong. Immediately, I started getting phone calls from my parents, and even my book agent rang me up and was like, "Did you actually get that tattoo?" "No, it's not a real tattoo." I mean, it is a real tattoo, but it's on someone else's body. That's their cross to bear. I can only imagine what that person's family and book agent went through. My parents were not supportive of me getting tattoos. But whose are, am I right? Some people, like my parents, say that your body is like a temple, and getting tattoos is like putting graffiti on it. Which, sure. Okay, that's why I paid a professional graffiti artist to paint my temple exactly how I wanted. Also, you can't tell me not to deform my body when that's exactly what you did before I was even 24 hours old. Also, Jesus had piercings, and he loves showing them off to his buddies, so I think you'd be chill with a little tattoo. After much thought and deliberation, I finally settled on what my first tattoo would be. This was going to be permanently inked onto my body for the rest of my life. I got a tattoo in Courier New. Luckily, the artist was able to finish this in one session. It took quite a while, almost 5 whole minutes. Now let me explain why I got it. It was so that if anyone ever asked me, "Do you have any tattoos?" I could go, "Why, yes, I do," and then roll up my sleeve, and then I'd go, "Ha, ha, ha." When I showed off my tattoo on Jaden's Streamathon, there was one comment that said, "James having tattoo actually tattooed onto him is exactly the kind of tattoo I expected James to have." And that made me feel really good, because that meant the tattoo fit my vibe. And the second reason I got the tattoo was because I wanted to rebel. Since tattoos were frowned upon growing up, I wanted to have one just to have one. So I got a tattoo with no meaning whatsoever. Which, in a way, is the meaning. Even though the tattoo was small and usually covered up by my sleeve, I still felt anxious about getting it. And I continued to feel that way for about a week after I got it. It was a jump scare every time I saw it in the mirror, and I would look at it closely and go, "Yep, that's really in there. I sure hope I don't regret this." But then, after some time, the tattoo just became a part of me. Like, I didn't look in the mirror and go, "Yep, there's James and tattoo." I would go, "Yep, there's James. Full stop." And from that day on, I loved giving people advice on tattoos. As a marked man myself, I think you should absolutely get that Shadow the Hedgehog full back piece. YOLO, remember? What? You're worried that it's going to look bad when you're 70? Yeah, it's going to look bad when you're 70. You're 70. Don't think about how bad it's going to look. Think about how much you're going to enjoy it from now to when you're 69. I've known people my age who still hide their tattoos from their parents, but like the honest prodigal son that I am, I wasn't going to be doing that. But the next time I visited my parents, I walked into their house, and the very first thing my mom said to me was, "Do you have any tattoos?" She beat me to the punch. What? Why would you ask that? "Because last night, I had a dream that you came home and were covered in tattoos. So, which one of you incepted my mom?" "God?" I said, "Are all tattoos bad?" "Yes, all of them are bad. Even this one?" And I rolled up my sleeve and revealed my massive tat. And her reaction was, "Ah. Well, it's not the worst word to have permanently inked on your body." Later on, she said, "If you go to a Star Wars party, you could change it to Tatooine." So, I think she took it pretty goodly. Now, some of you might be thinking that my epic sleeve of a tattoo isn't that big a deal. It's tiny and can only be seen if I'm swimming or boxing or wearing a tank top. But you see, after getting tattooed, I experienced what people in the tattooing business call catching the bug. After seeing how much I liked my first tattoo and knowing that I could handle having a tattoo, I was ready to get something badass. I set up a big boy tattoo appointment with an artist I liked, and when I was in the tattoo shop, the artist asked, "Is this your first tattoo?" "Is this my first tattoo?" No, sweetheart. I think I know a thing or two about tattoos. So, without further ado, I would like to debut this out of the blue tattoo. You know, from the Dark Crystal, the Jim Henson 80s puppet movie that I did a video on it years ago. Now I have the best character permanently inked onto my skin forever and ever. That movie will always hold a special place in my heart, and now it'll hold a special place under my skin. And now, whenever I show someone the Chamberlain, we end up talking about the Dark Crystal, which is great, because that's what I wanted to talk about anyways. I think I just discovered an autistic conversational cheat code. When I was getting it done, the artist asked me if there were any other tattoos that I wanted to get, and I said, "Why, yes, I do. I wanted to get the computer from Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared, because I also love that series, and because I'm a computery guy." And I didn't realize until as I was explaining it to the artist that both of these characters are puppets. So I don't know what that says about my psyche. I never thought that I liked puppets that much. But if anyone wants to psychoanalyze me in the comments, that'd be great. And speaking of YouTube comments, I know a lot of people are going to bring this up, so I'm just going to address it right now. You probably noticed that Chamberlain isn't holding his iconic triangle scepter. Yeah, I already know that. That's because he's holding the Emperor's scepter. It's like my own little headcanon. He got to be the Emperor because he's cool and awesome and... Come on, Dark Crystal fans. You think I don't know my lore? I didn't get the wrong scepter or anything. You think I'd get something wrong about the Dark Crystal? Okay, you want to know what happened? I own a Chamberlain statue because, of course, I do. And I took pictures of it to send as a reference image to the artist. And I totally forgot that I accidentally broke off his triangle scepter. And now, because of that, he's holding an entirely different scepter on the tattoo. But you know what? I don't care. This one's better. It's a more clear silhouette. Now, this time when I went to show my parents the tattoo, I don't know exactly what I was hoping for, but I wanted to see some dramatic pearl clutching. You know, just some real disappointment. Chamberlain had to be split up into two sessions, and I only got one done when I went to Arizona for a wedding. I saw my mom, and she didn't immediately ask me if I had any more tattoos. God didn't tattle on me this time. I told her, "Mom, I gotta tell you something, privately." "What is it?" "I need you to keep a secret from Grandma." "Okay." "I'm serious. Grandma can't find out about this." "Okay." "Look, it's Chamberlain." And I showed her the unfinished tattoo, and she went, "Oh, do you even like the Dark Crystal that much? I mean, yeah, the plot's kind of mid, but it's a cool world. Why were you more upset about my fake Baby Yoda tattoo than my real Dark Crystal tattoo?" She didn't care, and neither did my dad. And you know what? I actually showed my grandma too, and she liked it. I can't make these people mad, no matter what I do. One of my cousins is a tattoo artist, and I was talking to him about tattoos, and my mom said, "Oh, you should get your cousin to finish it." And even he said, "Do not do that." Speaking of tattoo advice, if you're thinking about getting a tattoo, I think you should wait. Obviously, it's your body, your choice, but with the minimum age of tattoos being 18, and in some states 16 with parents' permission, I just can't imagine being happy with any tattoos 16-year-old James could think of. All I'm saying is that I'm glad I waited and gave myself time to really know if this is what I wanted. And it was. I know you're young and you want to look as hardcore as possible, but you can still get a tattoo when you're like 23 and it'll look good, trust me. No matter what tattoo you get, it's a way to express outwardly to the world what you like, what you want to remember, and who you are. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm about to get a full back piece of my grandma's face. There's literally no way my family wouldn't love that. Thank you all for watching this YouTube video, and now that you're all done, I'm excited to announce that I have a Funko Pop of me! If that's something you're interested in, then you can head on over to my website and you can get a signed Funko while supplies last. As always, thank you to my amazing team, and the next time I'll see you, I might have more tattoos, who knows. I understand that there are things that I don't understand. For example, theoretical physics, or how to make friends. But I do know that the world is not flat, that vaccines work, and listening to people tell me otherwise is admittedly a guilty pleasure of mine. Whether it's conspiracy theories or horoscopes, I love watching people pour their heart into something they genuinely believe in, only for me to go, "I disagree." But please, continue. There are some beliefs that I don't agree with, but are absolutely fine to believe in, like thinking bucket hats look good on someone. But I think we can all agree that some beliefs can be incredibly damaging to a person, or even humanity as a whole, like the anti-vaxxers. Or racists. So I discovered a new trend, and I'm not sure if it's just kids being kids or a mentally damaging belief system, but I'm still going to talk about it and explain to my audience the importance of critical thinking and to notice the red flags and dangerous beliefs. So what am I talking about? I unfortunately fell down a rabbit hole and discovered a community of mostly kids on a phone application called TikTok doing something called reality shifting. This, by the way, is not a small community of like 20 people. There are amino groups with thousands of members, videos with hundreds of thousands of views, and they have their own acronyms. OMG.
Reality shifting stems from the belief in parallel universes, which, I gotta be honest, I'm not completely sold on that idea to begin with. You say that Schrodinger's cat is both alive and dead, but cats have 9 lives, so are 4.5 cats dead? How is a cat half dead? Either way, someone supposedly very smart has said that every decision you've ever made has caused the universe to copy itself and create a new reality where you made the different decision. I had cereal for breakfast this morning, but somewhere there's a reality where I ate my hamster for breakfast. Does that mean I create a new universe every time I scratch my butt, and somewhere there's a James with better manners? So times that by 8 billion people making decisions every day, plus the decisions made by, like, dogs and jellyfish, right? Those count, I think. And we get roughly infinity total realities. If you've seen Endgame, you know what I'm talking about. The reality shifting community says that since there are infinite realities, then there's a reality where GameStop stock is incredibly low, or that COVID didn't happen. Or perhaps there's even a reality out there where Hogwarts is real, and a messenger owl just dropped off your acceptance letter. And through the right meditation, you can transfer your consciousness from your current reality, your CR for short, to your Hogwarts desired reality, your DR. And for some gosh darn reason, Hogwarts is the number one shiftable destination location. But obviously, it's not just Hogwarts. Any fictional universe is fair game. You could go to the Hunger Games or Lord of the Rings. I'm not sure why, though. A lot of bad things happen there. And since all logic is thrown out the window, cartoon and anime realities are shiftable destinations. Because if Schrodinger's cat taught us anything, it's that there are some universes that are just 24 drawings a second. So because there are allegedly infinite realities, people will write down what they want their desired reality to be, and this is called a script. It's funny, you know, normally scripts are made to tell fictional stories, but these people think that what they write down will be 100% real. And you can make a script of whatever you want. You can say, I want to shift to Hogwarts and be in a relationship with Draco Malfoy. I mean, not me, this is just an example. Now listen, you're a smart kid, okay? Hopefully, I don't have to explain to you that that's not how life works. If you believe you can hop into different realities, then that's great and I see no problem with it. Is what I would say in a different reality, but in this reality, I have a lot of questions. If you can shift your consciousness into a different version of you, what happens to the alternate reality you's consciousness? You're just taking over someone else's body. This other you had a life and a family, unless you're going to a YA fantasy novel, and you just took over their whole body. What if there's a you in an alternate reality that's like, I want to live in a reality where there's a pandemic and I'm sadder. And then they shifted here. What happens to your consciousness? You don't trade. The reality shifting community says that when you shift, you leave behind a clone of yourself. Obviously. So when you shift, there's someone's consciousness unaccounted for. What about the realities where one of you had waffles for breakfast and the other had pancakes? Both of these yous are pretty much the exact same. So then both of you will want to reality shift to the exact same Harry Potter reality. Do you have to share a body with the other yous that have shifted to the same reality? Are you telling me that Voldemort and any fictional villain is real? How come half of us didn't get turned to dust when Thanos snapped? If anyone can reality shift, are you telling me there's a chance that Voldemort could download TikTok and reality shift here? If you go to Hogwarts, you're leading Voldemort right to us. How can there be a reality where magic is real? Sure, I don't know how parallel universes work, but they're parallel, so the laws of physics should still be the same, right?
But James, I know that reality shifting makes no sense and is impossible, but then why do so many people claim to have shifted?
Because they're dreaming. Shifting happens when you fall asleep, and if you fill your subconscious with things from your desired reality, would you be surprised that you had a dream about Hogwarts? Something about this trend doesn't sit right with me. A lot of the reality shifting TikToks were done by kids, and kids, as you know, can get really obsessed in the fandom and do some cringy stuff. If these kids were making fanfiction and writing themselves on a date with Bakugo, that would be totally fine. Healthy even. Heck, even if these kids flat out said, I love Harry Potter so much that I want to manipulate my dreams to be about him, that would be fine too! But something about actually believing that you're astral projecting into a fictional universe? I don't know, that level of obsession just feels unhealthy, my guy. And also, back off Bakugo, he's mine. The problem with reality shifting and actually conspiracy theories as a whole is that they pretend to be based on factual evidence when they're entirely a pseudoscience. You start off with a scientific idea, multiple realities, and then you make up whatever you want and use what the scientists have said about multiple realities as proof. Even though no scientist has said anything about being able to move your consciousness outside of your body, or that you leave a clone of yourself behind when you reality shift, or that cartoon universes exist, I've seen people in videos say that they've done research on reality shifting, but I feel confident in saying you didn't get a degree in quantum physics. I want you to cite your sources and show me the studies, because research isn't just believing what other people said on TikTok. These TikToks get impressionable kids to believe in reality shifting in pretty manipulative ways, saying that if you didn't shift, it's because you didn't believe hard enough. When you get these doubts and say, oh, I can't shift, I don't even know if it's real anymore at this point, try and ask yourself after, but what if it's real? What if I can shift? You want to find out, do you? I get it. Harry Potter is a cool world. That's why they made a whole theme park about it. Who wouldn't want to drop out of a Muggle public school and live in a castle with a bunch of soft British boys? And also magic or whatever. But you need to be mindful about where you're getting your information. I've watched hours of flat earthers and anti-vaxxers talk about their beliefs, and these people get their information from non-credible sources, and they end up pushing more fake information online, and it creates this echo chamber that warps their worldview. I don't want kids watching these TikToks or going on Amino and essentially get lied to and think this is how the world works. I'm hoping that all of these people will look back at themselves in 10 years and go, yeesh, I can't believe I was so obsessed about a thing, I literally tried to astral project myself across the multiverse. Right, Bakugo? I know that this reality can suck sometimes, and right now it's looking pretty bad. But like it or not, this is the one reality we get. A lot of things may be out of your control, but according to theoretical physics, we make a lot of choices. And all our choices lead us down different paths. So what you need to do is not give up on this reality for a literal fictitious one, but instead to make choices that will make this current reality your desired reality. Thank you all for coming to my TED Talk.
You should gamble. That's right, I said it. You all should gamble so you learn firsthand how stupid gambling is. Here's the stitch with gambling, okay? Gambling is only fun if you don't understand math. Humans have been gambling since the dawn of whenever money was invented. I mean, just take one look at the Las Vegas Strip and you will immediately understand how lucrative the gambling industry is. They built the Statue of Liberty, the Eiffel Tower, and Caesar's Palace all on the same street. Gambling is everywhere in Las Vegas. As soon as you step off the plane, you're bombarded with slot machines in the airport. Are you kidding me? You can't wait to gamble? As soon as you step off the airplane, you just immediately go, I gotta win big! Look, I understand why people gamble. I get it. I play Magic the Gathering, and opening up a booster pack and not getting any expensive cards is the exact same feeling as losing your entire life savings. The first time I gambled, I was in Australia for VidCon. After the convention, me and a bunch of mates went to a bar, and I found out that there was a casino attached to it. And I thought, perfect! I'm in a different country, so my parents will never find out that I gambled! Plus, I'm of legal age and independent. Let's get our gambling freak on! I was only comfortable asking my friend Moz to borrow some cash, because I feel like if a friend asks, hey, can I borrow some money to gamble with? You're never going to see that money or that friend ever again. All Moz had was a fiver, which is Australian for $5. So I only got one chip to gamble with, and I decided to spend that one chip on roulette, because that's the only game I knew how to play. I know how to play blackjack, but I know there's a mathematical algorithm for the best, most perfect way to play, so I don't know how to play blackjack, you know? And poker is too intimidating. I can't deal with people hyperanalyzing my facial expressions to see if I'm bluffing. I already know I'm a bad liar. And the last time I actually played poker was with Luigi on my DS. Here's some honest strategy for the game roulette, okay? Sometimes a roulette table will have a TV screen that gives you stats for hot numbers at the table. Like it'll say, Red 23's been popping. It's been hit 14 times today. Ignore those statistics. Every square at a roulette table has an equal chance of hitting regardless of whatever the previous numbers were. Just ignore those stats and always bet odd. So, with just one chip to my name, I was able to turn that single chip into 200 Australian dollary dues. Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm feeling it. Oh, the gambler's high. Oh, I'm not sure about your investments, but a 4,000% profit is very good. I could have kept going, but I really wanted to rub my winnings into Maz's face. I cashed out my chips, went back to the bar, and then slammed the two hundos on the table and said something cocky like, how about them cheeky buggers, mate? And Maz was like, did you just win those 200 wibbly-wobbly dollary dues? Yeah, and it's all mine. And Maz went, hey, you still owe me 200 Australian dollars for that other thing I did for you. Oh, yeah, I guess I do owe you that. Then he scooped up my two Australian hundos that I was just rubbing in his face. It's an anomaly that my very first casino experience was so positive. It was like the devil himself was tempting me to continue gambling. See? Gambling lets you pay off your debts. Never stop. That, or I'm just really good at Australian roulette. This is probably how people get addicted to gambling, huh? Casinos are designed to make you stay in them for as long as possible. There's no clocks or windows, so you can't see how late it's getting. Chips are used, so it doesn't feel like you're spending money. And there's supposedly free alcohol, but I guess they run out whenever I show up. But even knowing all the ways casinos manipulate you, it's kind of fun just being inside a casino. All the lights, the old ladies at the slot machines smoking away their already decaying lungs, the people crying in the bathroom because they have a gambling addiction. It's great. Hey, buddy, don't worry. You're going to win next time. I'm sure of it. To counter the life-ending stressors, though, people will give the advice, if you're going to gamble, have a set budget and just assume you're going to lose it all. But I couldn't even do that. Not the sticking to a budget part. I couldn't bring myself to gamble away my allotted budget. When I went to Vegas, I told myself I was only going to gamble $300. But after I lost $200, I thought to myself, yeah, I don't think this is a good investment anymore. One time I was on a slot machine and I got the five buffaloes in a row or whatever, and I got the chance to win a jackpot. There was a mini game on the slot machine where I had to flip over tiles that had either bronze, silver, or golden apples. And if I flipped over three golden apples, I'd win the golden jackpot. And if I flipped over three silver apples, I'd get the silver jackpot, and bronze apples gave the bronze jackpot, which was the lowest jackpot. The gold jackpot was $5,000. So I flip over the first tile, and it's a golden apple. And I think, then I flip over another tile, and it's another golden apple. And that's when I got the feeling. Oh, my God. I might actually win $5,000. Then I flip over three bronze apples in a row, winning the lowest jackpot. I don't even remember how much it was because I spent it all on the very same slot machine. And I immediately knew what happened. The game was dangling that golden jackpot right in front of my face, making me think I was one golden apple away from making it big, even making me pick which tile to flip over so it would make me feel more in control, when the whole time the computer could just change what was on the tile that I flip over because it's a computer. It can cheat. It's Schrodinger's jackpot. And before you think I just got really bad luck, that very day I was walking through the casino and I saw a guy playing on the same slot machine and he got to the same jackpot minigame. And I stopped to watch him and the exact same thing happened. He flipped over two golden apples and then three bronze ones. I don't know what the statistics are of that happening twice, but it's mighty coincidental. Why are we still gambling if the majority of people who gamble lose all their money? Because it's fun. It's a stupid way to spend your money, absolutely. But the rush, man. In Australia, there were multiple times where I could have lost all my money, and statistically I should have. But whenever an odd number was hit, I couldn't help but throw my hands in the air and celebrate. I was hugging the dealer over winning $20. However, no matter how many times you win the jackpot, if you spend enough time in a casino, you will always lose. Ever hear the phrase, "the house always wins"? That's because they have the mathematical advantage and computers who cheat. Gambling is not an investment. It's not a way to pay off your debts. It is entertainment. If done responsibly and in a social setting, gambling is absolutely fine to indulge in. And if you get upset that you lost all your money, what did you think was going to happen? I like to think that my videos, for the most part, have greatly improved in quality from the past year. Let's watch a clip of my first video. Roll the clip.
So you know those books you make in elementary school that you write as a class and some publishing company makes them into a real book?
So you know those books you make in elementary school?
Man, I don't think I could sound less insecure. And I was 18 when I made that video. I was legally old enough to get married. So I'm always trying to improve the quality of my videos. I've gotten a better microphone, I've learned to level out my audio, I like to think my drawings are more lively and move more, but sometimes when I record, I tend to smack my lips. And I always thought it was because my mouth was dry. So then I would chug an entire water bottle, but I would still sometimes have smacky lips. So I thought, is it possible I could be drinking too much water? Is that even a thing? Maybe I should drink Gatorade. So no big deal, right? First I Google how to stop lip smacking. And since I couldn't find anything that had pictures...
How can you read this? There's no pictures.
I decided to ask YouTube instead. I don't know, maybe someone out there makes voice acting tutorials. But instead, I stumbled upon something indescribable.
So, tonight.
So there was this about 14-year-old girl just getting
real close to the microphone and smacking her lips.
And apparently there's a lot higher demand for people who smack their lips than people who don't. Jeez, I don't even know why I try to fix that problem. But you're probably thinking, James, this is just one video, right? This is just one person making a YouTube video, right? There's not like an entire community dedicated to...
Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response, ASMR. This is the entire Wikipedia page printed out with notes. You know, I bet at least some people watching this already know what it is. And you didn't tell me about it. What, you think I wasn't going to find out?
And my college charges 5 cents to print a page. So I spent 65 cents printing out this Wikipedia article. Money I'm never getting back. So what is ASMR? Basically, it's a video of someone whispering into a microphone and making certain sounds for about 20 to 60 minutes. Now you might be thinking, why? Why do they do this? The Wikipedia article says that the purpose of ASMR is to give listeners sort of a tingly sensation in the head, and some people describe it as akin to a mild electric current. The best way I can think to describe it is, you know those Bob Ross videos? Remember how you just loved to watch them even though you couldn't paint? Why did you watch them? Yeah, you watched him because you loved his soft, gentle voice and the sounds of the paintbrush on the canvas. And then when he beat his paintbrush on that little thing, you can beat me, Bobby. I think that's what ASMR is trying to create. It's basically supposed to give you the same feeling when you watch a Bob Ross video.
Man, you're watching those videos a lot differently than me.
Now, since I read the Wikipedia page, let me tell you some useless facts about it. The first case of ASMR was in a book written in 1925 that said, "With a roughness in her voice like a grasshopper, which rasped his spine deliciously and sent running up into his brain waves of sound." The frick? In this part about evolutionary history, David Hurin states that the ASMR effect is clearly strongly related to the perception of non-threat and altruistic. Faith, what is this word? Altruistic?
Altruistic.
The ASMR effect is clearly strongly related to the perception of non-threat and altruistic attention, and has strong similarities to physical grooming in primates, who derive enormous pleasure, borderlining on euphoria, when being groomed by a grooming partner, not to get clean, but rather to bond with each other. So that begs the question, do dogs like it?
ASMR was officially created in 2008, but it didn't get popular until a Facebook group along with a subreddit was created in 2010. Now, it wasn't always called ASMR. Instead, people used phrases like brain massage, head tingle, brain tingle, spine tingle, and my personal favorite, attention-induced head orgasm. What are you doing with those grasshoppers, ma'am? But a lot of people didn't want to use orgasm in the name, because then people would think that, well, this ASMR stuff is pretty sexual, which it totally isn't, you guys, except in 2015 when people started making a new genre of ASMR videos called ASMR Otica. And something else that's worth noting on the Wikipedia page, the popularity of ASMR videos featuring women does substantially exceed those created by male performers. However, there are some popular male ASMRists, and not all video creators are heterosexual. So can I not make ASMR videos? Is that what it's saying? So the creator of the Facebook group back in 2010 coined the term autonomous sensory meridian response. Autonomous meaning that it's spontaneous, sensory meaning the senses or sensation, and meridian meaning orgasm. I'm not making that up. Now, the word meridian doesn't mean orgasm at all. But in the Wikipedia article, it says, Alan chose the word meridian, mistakenly believing that it was a kinder way of saying orgasmic. And look, it's even on our blog. So you're telling me this whole time, people have been using ASMR to mean climax, and that's not even what it means. Okay, some other things in the Wikipedia article I want to talk about is that apparently not everyone experiences ASMR. There's also a type of ASMR called binaural recording, where performers use two microphones and place them where your ears would be. So it's extra creepy. Another popular... Look, I'm lip smacking right now. Another popular theme is that these videos do a lot of role-playing, specifically clinical role-playing. Now, I'm someone who never really got into the whole role-playing experience, except when Captain Sparkles does it. Come on, where's part five? Let's read the wiki! The ASMRists provide clinical or medical services, including routine general medical examinations. The creator of these videos make no claim to the reality of what is depicted, and the viewer is intended to be aware that they are watching and listening to a simulation, performed by an actor. Yeah, I don't think we can really use the word actor, Wikipedia. Okay, what else? There's little scientific work done on it. Some people say that it's great for fighting insomnia and anxiety, but others say, no, it's not. But I mean, it's not like it's bad for you. And there has been one song made to trigger ASMR, but I listened to it. I don't think song is the best word for it. It's more just normal ASMR audio. Just because it was released on an album doesn't make it a song, Wikipedia. And there's one comment on this video that I think sums up ASMR pretty well. I'm extremely uncomfortable. I had no idea that ASMR was even a thing. Did you know it was a thing? I didn't. Heck, even College Humor made a parody ASMR video. I just want to make things clear. I'm not hating on people who make ASMR videos or even people who like to watch it. And I'm certainly not jealous that some of these people have hundreds of thousands of subscribers and millions of views and all they're doing is just brushing a microphone for 20 minutes. But guys, I think this ASMR thing is getting a little out of hand. Keep in mind that all these videos are about 15 minutes to an hour long. We have this girl with a southern accent singing I'm Blue and Numa Numa to remove a curse from you.
Numa Numa Numa, yay, I'm blue, dubba ding dubba da.
Inaudible whispering and tongue clicking, a couple of dentist role plays, a library book return role play, eating Chinese food, a couple of Yu-Gi-Oh card readings, a Minecraft let's play, a Five Nights at Freddy's tribute, Undertale, a Mario Maker let's play, Evening with the Vampire, the Joker, Satan, alien abduction for men, and torture role play. Really? You could type ASMR and then type anything after that and you'll get something.
You think God stays in heaven because he too lives in fear of what he's created?
And what's doubly weird is that all of these videos are recent. Like, they were made in 2015 or even 2016. Well, obviously Undertale and Mario Maker are recent. But Shrek? Shrek?
Shrek.
But just to finish things up, I just want to get something off my chest. This Undertale ASMR was pretty good. Compared to the other ones. You still might be thinking, yeah, it's pretty weird, James. Yeah, it is pretty weird. We've gotten pretty deep in the weirdness with those alien ones. And they have almost a million views. I just think this one deserves more views. You know, I just want one ASMR video to be like 40 minutes long. And then in the middle somewhere, the person just screams. Like really hardcore screams. Yeah.
James.
Hey, Dad, I kind of have a weird request.
Okay.
Can you film the dogs with headphones in them and then send me the video?
You mean dogs wearing earbuds?
Yeah. Make sure to film it horizontally.
I don't think they won't keep earbuds in their ears.
Mr. James, on Saturday morning at 10:03 a.m., you were observed coloring a picture of a dinosaur. Is that true?
Yeah. Can we go to recess?
Even though your mom had repeatedly asked you to clean up your toys, you disobeyed her and colored anyway?
I plead the fifth.
Your Honor, I have no further questions. James, I hereby sentence you to 15 minutes in the timeout corner.
I'm not going back to timeout!
I'm no scientist, but I think moms play a very important role in society. Without moms, who would drive us to soccer practice? Who else would tell us that it's not okay to eat cupcakes for breakfast? And who else would point at construction workers and say, that's why you need to get a college education, James? Oh, and I guess they also give birth to you and take care of you, but like, anyone could do that. Now, before I talk about how I was raised, I just want to give out this disclaimer that my mom is a great mom. She loves me. At least, she used to. If you asked me when I was 15 if my mom was a good mom, 15-year-old me would have said, no. Okay, but like, when I was little, I'd be talking with my friends, and we would be talking about our parents, and they would say stuff like, yeah, my mom lets me stay up till midnight, and she lets me play really graphic and vulgar video games. Yeah, my mom doesn't care if I wear clothes with skulls on them, and she lets me eat an entire tub of ice cream for dinner. My mom lets me play with knives. And I used to think that their moms were so much cooler for letting my friends have that much fun. But now, as an adult, I realize the sad truth, that these kids' moms weren't cooler. They just cared about them less. I'm not saying every mom out there is perfect, but a mom who takes the time to make a responsible member of society is pretty high up on the good mom list. Anyways, I love you, Mom, and now I'll immortalize and monetize some of that love. When I was younger and still in need of adult supervision, my mom would take me and my twin sister out to run errands with her. And as you would expect, we were rowdy and wanted to do our own thing. But my mom was prepared for this. She would bring two plastic baggies filled with 10 M&Ms, and every time my sister or I misbehaved, she would eat an M&M right in front of us. And she made sure we saw her eat our M&Ms. She didn't give us a warning either. If we did anything remotely bad, she would say, hey, hey, look at me. And I think that parenting technique is the psychological reason that M&Ms are my favorite candy bar.
I'm a good boy. I'm a good boy.
Something me and my sister really liked doing was hiding in those circular racks of clothes that they have set up in department stores. Being in the middle of one of those racks is such a surreal experience. I totally recommend it. But my mom didn't like it when we had fun, so she had to reach her arm in and try and grab us. Do you need any help? Oh, no, I'm just trying to get something in the back. There's a really nice belt that would be great for spanking my misbehaving children! I was spanked as a kid. Nothing too bad. I probably deserved it anyway. I don't remember any specific actions I did that earned a spanking, but I do remember outrunning my mom a lot. Another thing my mom did when I was very little was sometimes when she was washing her hands, she would turn to me and go, achoo, and flick water in my face. It really bothered me, but I never spoke out about it. And one day I just couldn't handle it anymore and I started crying. Why are you crying? But I was too sad to articulate how I was really feeling.
You said you were fucking around my face.
If you ask her about this today, she'll say that she doesn't remember doing that sneeze gag ever, but I remember it. Vividly. So to get back at her, I put a rubber band around the dish sprayer, so when you turn on the sink, it would spray water at you. Come to think of it, I do remember one reason I was spanked. Every time one of my siblings insulted another sibling or told them to shut up, we would have to pay them 50 cents. This resulted in a really weird dynamic when it came to insults. We would get excited when someone called us a name.
Mom, Luke called me a butthole!
That's 50 cents!
Woo! I'm rich!
But sometimes, us kids would just be messing around with each other and we didn't really mean the insults. So we would feel bad taking someone else's 50 cents. Like someone would say, hey, James, what's 6 plus 6? And I would say, 9, idiot. And my mom would hear me and say, James, that's 50 cents. And my sister would feel bad, so she would insult me back and say, James, you're an unpleasant person. Aw. Swear words cost you $5. That's why I don't swear in videos. But now I can afford it. So, f*** you, Mom. You piece of f***. My mom never washed her mouths out with soap, she wasn't that kind of person, but she did threaten to if we swore. And one time after I said a pretty naughty word, penis, she said, if you don't behave, I'm going to get the soap. And I said, I don't care, soap tastes good. All right, you big dingus, shove this in your mouth. You won't do it, no balls. So I bit into it and immediately regretted it. Now people are eating soap for views. So I guess we never grow up. Did anyone else's parents put a password on the family computer? Because my parents did, and I didn't know we were the only family that did that. We had a rule in the house that we were only allowed to be on the family computer for however long we read a book for. But luckily, I would just read a book for 15 minutes, get my mom to type in the password, and then she would just forget that I was on the computer and let me stay on for hours. And I played a lot of Neopets in RuneScape. Also, I wasn't allowed to have a TV or a computer in my room, because then I would have easy access to inappropriate animes. When I was little, cell phones were a thing, but my mom didn't let me have one, so I had to talk to all my friends over a landline. I hope I don't have to explain what that is, because that would make me feel really old, and I'm supposed to be in the prime of my life. But basically it meant if I was upstairs in my room talking to a friend, my mom could grab a phone downstairs in the kitchen and just join in our conversation completely uninvited. It didn't matter who I was talking to, I'd be having a conversation like this. I think the reason I internalize and hide away all my problems is because of how invasive my mom is in my personal life.
James, get off the phone and do the dishes.
Mom, I'm on the phone!
Wow, I can't believe you said that to the person who gave birth to you. So what are you two losers talking about?
Luckily, I would almost never be talking to a girl. So at least that didn't happen. This other time, my mom was giving me and my sister a ride to school, and on the radio, she was listening to the worst subgenre of rock music. Christian rock?
Just kidding, you can like whatever you want.
Anyway, we were pulling up to the school, and I told my mom to turn the music down. What? Why? Because I don't want people to think I listen to this, Mom. You see, I was in junior high, so I cared a lot about what other people cared about. So she turned the music down, but as we stepped out of the car, she turned the volume all the way back up and blasted the music for everyone to hear. Looking back at the situation, I think that's pretty hilarious. GG, Mom. These aren't all the times my mom embarrassed me, but those are all the ones I'm going to include in this video. I didn't even mention the time when I was 4 when my twin sister wanted to do ballet lessons, but she didn't want to do them alone, so my mom signed me up for lessons too. But that's a story for another video. Love you, Mom. You made me like this.
Okay, class. Spell Wednesday.
I don't know how to spell Wednesday.
Well, James, just sound it out.
Oh, okay. So, like this?
No, James, it's Wednesday.
You said sound it out, and that's how you sound it out.
Ha ha ha! You think you have it bad? Du is spelt with an X. Ha 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 ha
ha! I think it comes to no surprise that I'm terrible at spelling. I feel like everyone in life falls into two categories. Either you're good at math and bad at reading, or you're weird. And if you've seen my other videos, you know that I'm a math boy. My mom told me that I have dyslexia because she has dyslexia and I have all the symptoms, but we never got that diagnosed by a doctor, so you can't make me take my meds, Mom! A lot of times what I do to cover up the fact that I spell lower than a first grade level is I will purposely misspell words to the point where it's obviously a joke. You thought I was doing that to be funny, but it's actually because I have zero self-confidence in my spelling and I don't want anyone to point out my mistakes. I mentioned this in a different video, but in elementary school, I was put into an honors program, and everyone had to take spelling tests a grade ahead of their level. And by everyone, I mean everyone except me, because I failed every single spelling test. So I had to take spelling tests that were on level. Ew. Every week when we took a spelling test, I would have to move to the back of the classroom, and the teacher would stand right next to me. She'd call out everyone else's word, which had like 8 syllables, like anti-disestablishmentarianism, and then she'd turn to me and give me my on-level word. James, your word is cat. Also, one year, our class did a spelling bee, and everyone had to participate, and like, I didn't even care that I was the first one out. Hey, that's almost my name. Another thing that I mentioned in a pretty old video is that I used to have a speech impediment when I was little. I couldn't pronounce my ahs and I talked like this. I'm good now. Obviously. So every other day during school, I had to go to a speech therapy class, and one day the teacher who taught me how to pronounce my ahs, I'll call her Mrs. Kool-Aid, gave me this sheet of paper with a bunch of raindrops on it, and she said, "For every raindrop on this page, say the word raindrop." But then she just left the room, and I said, huh, well, I'm not going to do this. I didn't say raindrop a single time, because, like, no one was even there. No one would have seen me not saying raindrop, so why would I do something that I didn't want to do? But then, the funny part is, when she came back, she asked, "Are you finished saying your raindrops?" No. Well, how many did you say?
I didn't say any.
You stupid child.
I told her the truth for some reason. I don't know why. It was probably the easiest lie in my life to get away with, but that's why I remember this story. I'm still mad at myself for telling the truth. And I had to say raindrop a bunch of times in front of her, and she would only go to the next raindrop until I said it right, and it was terrible. It really hurt my feelings. Since I was struggling with reading and spelling, I had to get an IEP, an incredible excellent personality, which meant I had to go to a special class for a little bit during school, and the teacher who taught this class was none other than Mrs. Kool-Aid. Oh yeah. I don't know why I said it like that. I don't remember anyone ever telling me I was put into a special needs class. I just remember going into speech therapy every other day, and then those classes slowly morphed into teaching me how to read and spell. I don't know, I thought reading this book would have helped me talk better. Two other kids were in the reading class with me, and I remember the day when reading for me just clicked. Us three were given a simple sentence to read. It was about bees. It was so simple. It was literally just, to defend their hive from wasps, bees don't sting the wasp. Instead, they all crowd around the wasp and flap their wings to raise their body temperature, heating up the wasp until it dies. And then Mrs. Kool-Aid asked us, okay, how do bees defend against wasps? And the other two kids said, they sting them. And I said, what? No, you moans! Didn't you weed this? The words in this paper have meaning when placed in a certain order to convey information. Also, I never want to get hugged by a bee. So I was in these classes all the way until the sixth grade. I was getting better at reading. I still wasn't great, but I was getting better at it. And one day, Mrs. Kool-Aid said, you know, James, you should try competing in the Battle of the Books.
Battle of the Books? Battle of the Books?
Battle of the Books!
Finally, reading sounds fun!
At my school, Battle of the Books was this competition where students were given a list of 4 books to read within a time limit of, like, 2 months. I don't remember how long it was. And after however many months it was, the contestants would sit in an auditorium and take turns answering questions about the books. And whoever got the most questions right would get a pizza party. And that's where the battle part comes in. We'd kill each other for pizza. And then there were 2 more rounds, each with 4 more books, so there was a total of 12 books you had to read. And we were allowed to be with a partner, so my partner was TJ.
Hey, TJ, do you remember Battle of the Books? Yeah, man, it was great.
Now, you're probably thinking that 4 books in 2 months isn't that hard, especially since they're kids' books, but as someone who didn't read any books on my own outside of school, it was a challenge.
But I discovered a way to cheat the system. I discovered something called audiobooks.
Instead of having to sit still and read the book, I could just have someone read the book to me. And I would get through the book so much faster. I'd be able to read a book in about 8 hours as opposed to reading a book never, because I would never be able to finish a book on my own. And I was actually able to understand what was going on. I legitimately thought that listening to audiobooks was cheating because of how well it worked. So I never told anyone my secret. Until just now. Please don't tell anyone. Also, I didn't just turn on an audiobook and start playing video games. No, I sat in my bed next to the CD player and followed along with the book, and sometimes I even took notes. I've wanted to talk about my love for audiobooks for so long, but I can't, because then people will think I'm getting paid by a certain company, but I'm not, and I'll prove it. Instead of wasting your money on quality audiobooks made by professionals, you guys should all check out LibriVox.org, where you can listen to free public domain audiobooks, which means there's only old-timey classical books on it, like Aesop's Fables, which, in my opinion, is all you need. Anyway, TJ and I did the Battle of the Books, and for one of the rounds, TJ was sick, so I had to answer the questions all by myself, and I never forgave him for that. And also, the whole time, I was keeping track of everyone's points, and me and TJ got the most questions right. My math skills are finally being useful. I was already craving the pizza. After the last round, the teacher said, okay, I'll tally up all the points and let you all know who the winner is in a couple of weeks. But since I was keeping track of everyone's score, I already knew we won. I turned to TJ and I said, TJ, guess what? We already... Oh, this is the round that you were sick on. How did I not notice that until just now? But then a couple of weeks go by and I'm not hearing any news about a pizza party. I was expecting to walk into class one day and there would just be a pile of pizza boxes waiting for me. But that never happened. The teacher in charge of the competition was the librarian. So one day I went up to her and I asked, did you ever say who won the Battle of the Books? Also, my favorite pizza is barbecue chicken. And she said, oh, these 2 fifth graders won. So the Battle of the Books was for both 5th and 6th graders. I was a 6th grader, so I went to all the 6th grader battles. But apparently, there was some low-life 5th grader who got every single question right and stole my pizza party! And that taught me a valuable lesson. Even when you work hard, you don't always get what you want in life. But that's okay. Because one day...
You'll be an adult and you can buy all the pizza you want without having to read first!
Boys and girls, come hear my greeting. I hope you don't plan on sleeping. Tonight, for while you are dreaming, evil awakes, unearthed and creeping. There's things that thump, things that bite, things that go bump in the night. What are these things you sit and ponder? Brace yourselves. We call them monsters.
What? He's going to tell us about monsters, but they're not going to be that scary.
Silence, you dirty apparition! Don't you see the danger you are in? For what I speak is 100% real. Don't believe me? Just ask my pet eel.
This guy is nuts.
What? I'm not an apparition. I'm a ghoul.
The first monster we'll see today is something that, likes to eat hay. First they champ, then they stamp, then...
Okay, I can't speak in rhymes for the whole thing. I have a question for you guys. Are you familiar with the term furry?
What?
Well, after doing research on these monsters, I don't think furry is a new concept. Humans, for whatever reason, have always been obsessed with personifying animals. And who can blame them? Look how cute these guys are. Now, a lot of these monsters follow a similar pattern. So if you ever wanted to Frankenstein up a monster, all you have to do is take two already existing animals, one of them being preferably a human, and then you just gotta put them together. You all know about mermaids. One part sexy, the other half is just some lady. Well, do you know about this even scarier combination? It's called a hippo. Campus. Half hippo, half college. They say after 4 stressful years, he accumulates $100,000 of debt and no one in his field is hiring. Oh, I'm just messing with you guys. Okay, but for real, a hippocampus is a half fish, half horse. Oh, like the Neopet.
What?
Yeah, a Fiopian. I had one when I was like 2. I used my Christmas paintbrush on it. You guys aren't scared of a literal seahorse? Well, how does it kill people? Like, can it turn them into stone? No, but the Scandinavians have a version called the Kelpie that tricks humans into riding them, and then it drowns the humans. Probably should have started with that one. That's... okay, I guess.
Alright, Edward, if a murderous horse doesn't put you on edge, then how about this? A monopod.
Yeah, that's right, it looks just like a regular person, but it only has one leg.
Whoa, are you calling amputees monsters?
No, this amputee has one giant leg. And by the way, these guys date back all the way to 400 BC, way before the first amputee ever existed. Also, despite them only having one leg, they're supposedly very fast, so imagine this guy aggressively chasing you at midnight. Yeah, I'm sure you'd piss your pants too. What about this? A blemmy. Again, looks like a regular person, but oh wait, where's its head? I don't see it anywhere. Oh, it's on its chest, like some kind of... Pokemon! Come on, does this not terrify you? How would you give this guy a hug without suffocating him?
My dad doesn't have a head. Also, he rides a horse, so this is all a pretty normal Tuesday for me.
Alright, it's fine that you're not scared, because I've been saving the best monsters for last. Everyone, meet the Serpuppard. It has the body of a lion, the head of a lion, but the neck of a snake.
Ugh, it's so gross. Why would anything need that long of a neck?
So it can talk to giraffes?
Imagine if it could retract its neck, and then you just think it's a normal old lion and say, hey, that's pretty scary, but at least it's 20 feet away from me, and then its head would just extend out of its body and then bite your head off.
Speaking of snake-based creatures, what is the second most mischievous animal? Answer, the snake. Snakes represent Slytherin from Harry Potter, and those guys are always up to something, and snakes were responsible for the fall of man. But do you know what the number one most mischievous animal is? Answer, the fox. He's been in a ton of fables. He's a master hustler. So the fox and the snake are two of the most mischievous animals.
But what if they had a baby together? Well, take a look at this monster from Chile called the...
I can't say it. The Jiravulu, there we go. It's a half fox, half snake, and it has a claw for a tail, and it also creates whirlpools to drown people. Now this would be a really cool monster if it wasn't so terrifying. You know what? I got even more snake-based monsters to show you. Take a look at the Amphisbina.
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 That's it, right? It's a half snake, half snake, but the same half. It's a snake with two heads on both ends for double biting action. I think it would be cool if there was a creature that was the snake's tail on both sides. That'd be so useless. Oh wait, that's just an oversized worm. How would either one of them poop? Great question. I honestly don't know how a real snake poops. And the last snake-based monster I'm going to show you is called the Chelalita longicollis. That's its Latin name. Its real name is the snake neck turtle. It's a lot like the serpapard with its long neck, but instead a turtle. But I doubt you'll have to worry about these things. There's no way these abominations can be real. No, those are real. Huh? They're indigenous to Australia. I saw one at the zoo with my dad. There's no way these things can be real. No, they're definitely real. But do you know what isn't real? All of us. None of us are real, James. Why do you think we all have the same voice? You're talking to yourself again. It's been 3 weeks since the accident. You need to snap out of it. What are you guys talking about? You're totally real. So, did I scare you? Huh? You guys scared? Hey, you! Knock it off in there. Everyone, shut up and look at this video. I love the internet. Gabe the dog is a rescue. Aw. Side question. Do you think Arthur Schwallow, Nobel Prize winner and inventor of the laser in 1957, would enjoy playing a round of laser tag, something that he invented? Someone should tweet to him and see if we can get him to play laser tag. Oh wait, he's dead. He'd be 95 years old if he was still alive. Oh, Jose, can you see? Well, he's playing laser tag in the stars now. What if that's what shooting stars are? Okay, here's a story sort of relating to the side question. So one time, me and this group of friends went to a laser tag place. Arena? For someone's birthday party. I forgot how old we were, but we were around 15 years old. So not that old, but old enough to think we were old. I don't know if any of you guys have been to a laser tag place, but when you get there, you usually have to wait for the game inside to finish up before you can go and play. So the laser tag place has these arcade games for you to play while you're waiting. So me and my friends were playing games, and this group of four guys wearing all black come in. I'm talking black long-sleeve shirts, black pants, they had black freaking gloves on. Three of them were wearing some sort of black hat, and the other guy who wasn't already had black hair. They looked about 18, maybe 19 years old. So, my first thought was, ha, look at these goths, what dweebs, pfft. But then I remembered that the laser tag arena was darkly lit. These guys weren't goths, they were wearing camouflage. Part of me was thinking, wow, these guys came prepared. But the other part of me was thinking, wow, these guys are even bigger dweebs. They came prepared to a laser tag fight. I don't know what these guys' names were, but for the sake of this video, we're going to call them all Hunter. Not because they have guns and they hunt people, but because I think only people with the name Hunter would do this. I don't know why I'm biased against the name Hunter, it's just one of those names. If someone named Hunter is watching, I'm not sorry. Before you go in and play laser tag, you all sit in this room and some employee tells you the rules of the game, and then at the end they make you repeat the rules to them. So they say, I will not run, jump, or climb. And then you say, I will not run, jump, or climb. But I remember while we were chanting the rules, the four guys were just staring off and not repeating anything. Guys, I think these four are planning on running, jumping, and or climbing. So we all start playing the game. This was the type of laser tag that you gotta make up a name for yourself, and it would tell you who shot who. And there were three teams. There was the red team, the yellow team, and either the blue or green team. I forgot the colors, it's not important. So, while we were playing, we were having fun, like any person playing laser tag would, and then I run into this group of people who are wearing strobe lights. I couldn't see their faces or anything in that direction, really, but I knew immediately who it was. Do you want to take a wild freaking guess who?
It was the hunter!
It was the hunters! So I got hit many times by them, and then I broke one of the rules. I ran away like anyone should when getting hit by light amplification by simulated emissions of radiation. I found one of my friends, and I said, did you see the guys with the strobe lights? And he said, yeah. And they gave me this scar! And he had a 12-inch scar on his face, and I'm just kidding, that didn't happen, it was lasers. So later in the game, I got to one of the high towers to get a good vantage point. I'm about to straight up snipe one of these dweebs! I waited for about 10 seconds when I saw a flashing light, followed by darkness, followed by another flashing light very quickly in the distance. And I just started spamming the trigger. I couldn't see any of their flashing lights that you're supposed to hit, so I was just aiming at a glowing ball. And then, I hit one of them. And I knew immediately it was them, because...
Remember how we got to name ourselves? Well, no one really took that seriously. We all came up with joke names like Butt Fart or Big Wiener or Shooty McShootface. I'm just kidding on that last one. That meme didn't exist back then. But the name that I chose was, are you ready for this? A Girl. Let me explain. When you got shot with a laser, it would say who shot you. So whenever I shot someone, it would say, a girl shot you. I mean, sure, it's sexist, but I thought it was the pinnacle of my comedy career. So, I don't know if any of you guys have been in this situation, but let me tell you, it is very hard to keep a straight face when halfway across a laser tag arena, an almost adult man screams with 100% seriousness, I'm gonna kill you, girl! That's how I knew I hit someone. It's when Hunter screamed that. So everything was pretty normal after that. I finished playing the game, and then when the game was over, I see the hunters holding a wad of black electrical tape in their hands. I'm not saying they put black tape over their sensors so you couldn't see them, but they totally put black tape over their sensors so you couldn't see them! Luckily though, their team didn't win, so ha! I mean, neither did my team, but it's not important. But I mean, screw those guys! Can you imagine them in the car driving to the laser tag place? Hunter's driving and he looks over and says, Hunter, did you bring the strobe lights? Yeah, Hunter, I brought them. Hunter, you brought the tape, right? Yeah, it's right here, Hunter. Hey, Hunter, where's your hat? Hunter said he was going to bring me one. Oh, sorry, Hunter, I forgot. Here, Hunter, take my hat. My hair's already black. Thanks, Hunter, you're the best. Yeah, Hunter sucks. If your name was Hunter, you probably suck, too.
Juan Ponce de Leon was famously known for searching for the legendary Fountain of Youth with his crew in the 1500s. Spoiler alert, he didn't find it, obviously, because he's dead. I think. But his search might have been successful if only he lived in the 21st century. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here to tell you that we have the key to immortality right in our grocery stores. And it all starts with this tiny red bottle of 5-hour energy. So drinking one of these gives you 5 hours of energy. So that means drinking two will give you 10 hours, right? It takes 17,520,000 hours to make up 2,000 years. And here's how we unlock our immortality. To get 17 million hours of energy, we would have to drink 3,504,000 bottles of 5-hour energy. After you do all that, you have enough energy to last the next 2,000 years. And there you go, that's how you live forever. Every 2,000 years, you just drink 3 million bottles of 5-hour energy. And what, that's 12 ounces a bottle divided by 128. So that's only 328,500 gallons of 5-hour energy, and boom. So it's not really a fountain of youth, it's more of a pond of youth. And you have to drink all that 5-hour energy every 2,000 years. It's not going to be forever. And it might take a while, so just set aside like an afternoon and just get sipping. Wait, hold on. If each bottle is $2.50, then how much would it cost? 8.7 million? Dang it! Only the rich get to live forever! Okay, guys, never mind. I guess immortality is impossible. Ugh, just looks like all of us are going to have to die.
Today's video was sponsored by carrots. We're actually alright if you put other stuff on us. I wouldn't consider my parents health nuts, more like health kernels. They would never buy unhealthy snacks, but they wouldn't force me and my siblings to go outside and play because it was always burning hot. And we just licked the melted candy off the sidewalk anyways. They would never buy sugary cereal. The most sugary cereal my parents got was Honey Nut Cheerios. But my mom would mix the Honey Nut Cheerios with regular ones to make it more healthy or something. So I would start every day spending 15 minutes picking out the regular Cheerios from the cereal bowl. That's right, my parents didn't buy us cable, Cocoa Puffs, or candy. My life sucked. We were allowed to eat sugary cereal for one day out of the year, and that was on Christmas morning. It's a fun tradition, and we still do it to this day. As a kid, I would always get jealous when my friends would pull out their Lunchables and tell me how much their family ate out and all the sugary cereals they got to eat. Meanwhile, I had a PB&J sandwich on wheat bread with the crust still on, but it's okay because I like the crust. But now looking back, I'm just so grateful that my mom cared enough about my health to instill these healthy eating habits into me at a young age. I mean, I don't follow them anymore because I live on my own and I don't know how to cook and bagel bites taste so darn good, but I'm still thankful my mom taught me what I should be doing. Now, if there's any parents watching this going, I like the way this James's mom character thinks. Good. I would recommend to all parents that you should be teaching your kids healthy eating habits as soon as possible. I definitely didn't appreciate it at the time, but now that I'm older and wiser, I'm thankful that I like the taste of wheat bread. My parents had a saying, the whiter the bread, the sooner you're dead. They would always get wheat bread. Even for hot dog and hamburger buns, they got wheat. Some of you might have had to use sandwich bread as hot dog buns. You're poor, I get it, but at least you didn't have to use wheat bread. However, now that I live on my own, I still get the wheat bread because I don't want to die young. I still have YouTube videos to make. Some things never change, I guess. Except I do get the white hot dog buns. The wheat ones are still gross. When I was a very little kid, my dad's work was throwing a barbecue get-together thing, and I got to eat as many hot dogs on white bread as I could handle. But the best part of it all was I got to wash it down with soda. Listen, I was very sugar-deprived back home. I had to catch up on all the sugar I was missing out on. I don't remember what the soda was exactly, but let's just say for the sake of this story, it was an original bottle of Coke from the 1800s. It might as well have had cocaine because I was addicted to all the white powdery stuff they added into that drink. Pretty soon, my tummy started to get the rumblies, and I had no idea what was causing it. So I told my dad, "Dad, my tummy hurts." And he said, "It's probably because you're dehydrated. Here, have some soda." And I still respected my dad at that age and thought he knew what he was talking about, so I drank more soda. And then I threw up and my dad said, "We should leave." I mentioned this next story in my first book, available in bookstores near you. Be on the lookout for book number 2, coming out at the end of March. But one time my mom bought a giant 3-pound bag of Skittles. I forgot what she bought them for, but they definitely weren't for us. She locked them away in a closet because she knew what us kids would do if we got our grubby little hands on the Skittles. This wasn't the first time my mom had to hide candy from us, but this time she forgot to lock the closet, leaving the Skittles unprotected. And me and my older brother ate the entire thing, and we would have gotten away with it, but then something came up. Puke. I threw up on the family room carpet. My mom saw how rainbow the throw up was and immediately put two and two together and knew that we had gotten into our Skittles. The funny part of this story is that my older brother got punished, but I didn't. Because according to my mom, I had already suffered enough. And that's why that story is in the chapter titled, Perks of Being the Younger Brother. Anyways, don't eat so much candy that you throw up. Okay, I'm going to be talking about M&Ms for a while, so to make it go faster, instead of saying M&Ms, I'm just going to say mmm. In one of my older videos, I said that my favorite candy bar was mmm, and every time I would tell people that, they would always say, "That's not a candy bar." I just can't do this anymore. But then something interesting happened. A year after that video was posted, mmm actually released a bar version of their candy. So now I can absolutely say that mmm is my favorite candy bar and not get any weird looks. Someone at the mmm marketing team sent me a box of mmm candy bars, and I think they wanted me to promote it, but because I said that mms are my favorite candy bar, whenever I go to a convention, sometimes you guys bring me mmm candy, which is very thoughtful, but you know, I like other things too, like Oreos and Twix and money. You know, I'm just saying you don't have to bring me mmm all the time. When I was visiting London, I went to the mmm store with my friends Adam and Mads. And if you don't know about the mmm London store, it's 4 stories tall, 35,000 square feet, and according to Wikipedia, the largest sweet store in the world. So it was kind of big. Once I stepped inside, my first thought was, okay, this is too much. It was like the candy forest scene in Willy Wonka, except it was all chocolate and expensive. In one part of the store, you could make your own custom mms with a picture and two phrases. So for the picture, I googled my cartoon self, held up my phone to the camera, and it bloody worked, mate. And for the phrases, naturally we wanted to write something that was meaningful, so we wrote Mad Stinks and Adam Smells. But the mm employee didn't allow us to write that because it was too negative and went against the mm brand. So knowing we were not allowed to roast each other, the next phrases we decided to print was Get Mads and Something Else YT. It wasn't creative, but without being able to make fun of each other, we didn't have a lot to work with. But those phrases weren't allowed either, because they were the names of some YouTubers, so they got flagged by the system, and they told us, "You'll need permission from the YouTuber, even though you're both right here. Listen, boys, I'm just a employee. I don't want to get sued." On one hand, I'm glad that mmm has a system in place to prevent people from stealing, but on the other hand, it's just mms! What do you think we're gonna do with them? So after 2 failed attempts at getting the phrase we wanted, we settled on getting Adam! And Mads! At least I still got my Cannonball guy printed, even though technically this image is copyrighted, so you'll be hearing from my lawyers soon. One of the disadvantages of being a YouTuber is the lack of benefits. We don't even have dental. And with all the junk food I'm eating and the flossing I'm not doing, I should probably see one. Can I confess something? I didn't know dentists were optional. I thought they summoned you to their offices like jury duty. That's what it felt like when I was a kid. I've never gotten a cavity, though. At least not one that I know of. So at least I'm doing something right. Now comes the part of the video where I give you advice on eating healthy, but I'm still working on that myself. And when I don't know what to eat, I can't help but biting down on a delicious carrot. Carrots are the most popular vegetable in the world, having been nominated as the best orange thing ever. Use code ODDONE next time you purchase a carrot to get 5,000 free carrot points and a bunch of weird looks at the grocery store. Give your body the fuel it needs. You wouldn't pour soda in a car engine and expect it to run. Of course, that's not really the best metaphor to use because you also wouldn't pour water into a car and expect it to run. I guess everyone drink gasoline because cars and people are the same. But the point is, you've only got one body, so you should take care of it.
I guess we're starting.
Hello, everyone. We're here to play a little drawing game, and I'm here with Jaden Animations.
Hello.
Hello. So what we're doing is we each chose a Pokemon. We're changing the type of the Pokemon. Let's get started.
You have to change Beedrill into a fighting type.
Beedrill is a pretty dope Pokemon, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You have Farfetch'd, and you have to change him into a psychic type.
Psychic.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Beedrill was on my team.
Did you enjoy him?
He has this move called Pine Needle.
I think it's Pin Missile.
He hit it more than once. He hit the Pokemon
more
than
once.
Yeah,
it's Pin Missile.
No, I think it's Pin Needle or Twine Needle or something.
What was your original team?
I do not remember. I chose Squirtle because I had Pokemon Blue, and I thought since it's blue, then I should get... I was a little kid, all right? Squirtle's going to be the best because this is a Pokemon Blue. And I want to say a Parasect was on my team, too.
Really? He's like one of the weakest Pokemon, honestly.
When they're level 100, though, then...
Beaks from the front are weird.
If this was an actual Pokemon, it'd be terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Because he's, like, really big.
It's kind of weird that he was on my team, because as a kid, I was terrified of bees.
Really? I'm scared of bees, too, actually.
Yeah, I got stung. Maybe this could be a video, but I got stung twice from...